In a world where Toku fans are easy and the wrong figure arts are released for retail, three man children stand not quite shoulder to shoulder with their trusty spray can at their side, united across timelines and space against the congealed, grimdark 90s inspired hordes. Shuku and Shinobi, Dossum Rifle, Jedi Mom, Aerosol. Their mission, to bring you the latest Toku news in the craziest way possible. Riders, Rangers, and Rambles Season 4. If you don't listen to this show, you don't know anything about Tokusatsu.
Hello, and welcome to our Season 4, Episode 27.
Back in the Gun. Yep, I went with it. Oh, deal boy. With the no. haters.
No. No. I say we redo this.
No.
From the top.
I agree with Aerosol.
That's the title!
You're the title.
Fine, the title is now you're the title. Yeah, the title will just be Dossum then. How about that?
It's not a funny pun.
Well, you said I'm the title, so...
Not literally.
It's literally the title. Let's just call the episode literally. There. How about that?
Maybe. Who knows? I'm gonna miss Rob Lowe. But anyway.
Yeah, me too. Make it sound like he's leaving, like, existence. Man, I'm gonna miss Rob Lowe when he crosses over to the spirit world. That seems like something Chris would do. Like, I just see him approaching Kor in the spirit world. Hey, Kor, that was literally the most exhilarating run I've ever had. I gotta go do sit-ups and listen to some ocean sounds.
So, anyway, one-ups. I'm still unpacking. I
one box at a time.
Yeah, I'm really lazy, you see.
Brian does one box a week, so...
Basically.
He does one box and then he reads a torque.
I unboxed all of my DVDs, which are now all over the backside of the room, so those are going to have to go on shelves eventually. The boxes of my toys have shifted slightly so that I could set up a table that is now my review station, which is to the right of me. So that's the thing. I still haven't opened any of the actual boxes yet. I've been playing Pokemon and leaving the house because I didn't want to be here. I wanted to be somewhere that was not here. Because it's dirty here.
You can just see the work. Wait. Why did Kat pull out your dishwasher?
Well, it wasn't hooked up.
Oh, was it like a broken one that was just there and you got
to
get a new one?
Yeah, like, you might have been able to hook it back up and attempt to fix it, but it wasn't worth it. So, they deactivated it. Her dad came over and, like, cut the feet off of it, which is, sounds kind of sadistic. But they had the dishwasher and, like, they built the floor, like, around it and some weird-ass shit and, like, wouldn't come out. So he had to cut, like, the wooden feet off of it to try to pull it out. And then there was wheels in the back that wouldn't go over the floor. And so he just left. And apparently Kat got tired of it and just pulled really hard and, like broke the floor.
Because that was the only context I got, was the picture of it and then Kat saying, I got tired of looking at it. So I was like, in my version, it was a perfectly usable dishwasher, and it was just like bugging Kat when she was sitting there at the kitchen table and she just hulked it out of there. She was like, ugh! Come up, honey, what happened? It was looking at me funny.
That's half true, so.
Well, so now next week you can say in your one-ups for your hauls, you got a dishwasher. Most exciting one-ups ever. Unless you're just going to wash your dishes all by hand now.
What I don't understand, though, is how you got the dishwasher into the bouncy castle.
Very carefully. Maybe the dishwasher is actually bouncy.
He just had a clown make a balloon animal dishwasher. Except it's no longer an animal. But
it just had the illusion of being metal.
That's why Kat was able to manhandle it so easily.
It was actually a balloon.
Totally. Balloons.
Anyway.
That went weird.
That was the thing.
We created a whole scenario.
I haven't really bought anything too exciting. My Ami Ami box got here, so that had shit in it. I am getting a box from HLJ tomorrow that has some Capsule Judenshi in it. What else? Mail-wise, nothing else. I was at Walmart today and bought some more Pokemon cards and Transformers, some Construct Bots. Found a couple of the... they're not new, because it was Black and White Series 2, but of the two packs, I think I have almost all of those now. Not that I really care, but I seen them, I was like, oh, bye. So, that's really it. Not too much wild or exciting, but I built Magna Ortis while we were watching Superhero Taisen Z, and so he's really cool. The thing I like about the Wars LBXs is, like, every time I build one, it's not like it trumps the last one, but there's always something I really enjoy about it.
Uh-huh.
So outside of Phantom being really, really weird, I haven't really disliked any of the Wars kits at all. Phantom's probably my least favorite, though.
He looks cool sitting there.
Yeah. Functionality-wise, he's kind of awful, though.
You know what bugs me? I don't remember if this is private discussion or future discussion, but the fact that you mentioned another Phantom that, what's his name? Damn it, his dramatic name!
Serenity Chrysler!
Yeah, that he's gonna use. And Phantom has appeared twice. And once it was invisible.
I'm guessing, I don't know that for certain, but...
Well, even so, just the fact that Phantom's only appeared twice is annoying. And once it was practically invisible. Just saying.
It was invisible, basically.
You're invisible?
Yeah, I know. And they're up on pre-order in Miami.
Oh, the new Phantom thing? And
New Phantom thing and new...
Dot Phaser?
Yeah, Dot Phaser Riser GXUTO. That's what it says.
Game on, get your game.
And the other one is Ezarudy.
It's a Rudy? His name is It's a Rudy.
LBX 53. LBX D Ezarudy pre-order.
Is a Rudy.
Thank you, Ami Ami.
It's a funny name.
It's your turn.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I haven't been up to a whole bunch this week. I haven't really gotten to play much Pokemon. I haven't even played Batman since I beat it. I kind of wanted to take a break before Assassin's Creed came out. Speaking of that, I picked that up. I picked up Assassin's Creed 4, and I paid off my PS4. So that's all ready. I'm picking that up tomorrow. Well, today now. It's open right now. And I think that was it for purchases, really. There hasn't really been that much going on this week. It's been pretty boring. We watched Superhero Taisen Z, so that was fun because we got to talk about it all together and laugh every time not Geki Violet showed up on screen.
That made the whole thing worth watching, really.
And the most amazing hero of all time, Joe Chuck. So... yeah, that was fun. I think that's really it. It was pretty uneventful.
I almost want to buy the Gavin Type G figure. SH figure.
Joe Chuck. Didn't you have it?
Not Type G. I had the normal.
Oh, okay.
Joe Chuck for life.
I am designing a poster marketing type series of posters for our podcast for one of my classes, though. So that's going to be funny. I won't show them because I'm embarrassed of my abilities, but everybody gets a poster except Aerosol because it doesn't fit in with my aesthetic. So sorry, Aerosol.
Wait, what?
Nothing.
I wasn't paying attention. I heard that you were designing posters. I was looking at LBXs and drilling.
That's all you need to know.
And drilling?
Drooling.
Oh.
But, no, seriously, I'm sorry. What?
Oh, don't even worry about it. It's nothing.
No, I legit just want to know.
You're not getting a poster.
Yeah.
No, I... Just wait till I hear the recording, then.
That's what he said. I just said it.
You're not getting a poster. That's
no, I know that I'm not getting a poster. I just didn't know what it was.
Oh, it's for the podcast. Because I'm using that one of our fan arts as the main poster for the podcast, and then we each get an individual one with our individual faces. But you are on the main poster as the alpaca pixelated guy. It just says also starring Aerosol in the corner, and then you got the little alpaca. And one of the things I'm designing is it's like a little flyer, and it's your it's meant to be like an advertisement, and it's the top 20 episode titles you made, so you do get that. So that's fun. I thought about just handing in the business card as my final thing, but it doesn't fit in aesthetically with the theme I'm going for everything else, so I think it'll catch on. Plus the print's really tiny. So I don't know, but so that's fun. Church.
Oh, my turn. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm still looking at LPX.
I thought maybe you're waiting for Kevin's 20 minutes, but...
Yeah, that too. I haven't really done anything. I'm... For whatever reason, I've been on a Dragon Ball kick, so I'm rereading some of my favorite battles from the manga. Specifically the tournament ones, because those are the best. Aside from that, nothing really. I just don't do shit.
Sounds like my life.
Well,
yep. This is the most riveting one-ups ever.
On Brian's poster, it says, "Without Shuki, we would all die." I put that on there. It's in your little bio.
Okay.
You might as well put a gun to your head.
I thought about putting that on there. Like, I tried to put some sort of quote or saying. I couldn't think of mine, so I just put movie reference. Because I couldn't think of something that I specifically say all the time. Like, for Brian's is, "Bitch, I don't care, I'm the Shukun Shinobi." Mm. Kevin's is, "He has a thingy and it's not final."
It's glorious because no one's going to understand any of this.
I know, exactly. And it's funny because we had to present somehow, like, what our idea was, and he wanted me to somehow demonstrate what the podcast was about, with the exception of also talking about it. I'm like, God, the show's so explicit. I don't know if I can just, like, play an episode. So I played Aerosol's episode 38 trailer that, like, perfectly summed up all of our inside jokes.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Episode 38.
It's like, this is going to be filled with...
I don't remember which one that was.
It was the perfect one because it was had like... it ended with, "Fuck you, Forze, fuck you, Forze." I stopped it before it got to that. But like, the 30 seconds perfectly summed up like the majority of our reoccurring jokes. And that's what I said. That's why I was showing it. I said... Because I said our podcast is pretty crazy and we have a lot of inside jokes. And this sums up a good chunk of them. I said, you won't get most of it. So just be prepared. So I was trying to pick through episodes to show them. I thought about showing them the 90s one, and it was just, we laid it on so thick, it was embarrassing. Like, we're like, "Lay down some fat beach, yo," and we just kept saying, "That's tight, that's tight." It was so embarrassing but funny. And oh man.
And this is our podcast. And this is our podcast if we were in the 90s. I'm very sorry.
And one of the last two episodes, I listened to like the beginning of it to see if that could be a good excerpt to show. And Brian, you missed it. You're getting slipping on the censor. Kevin slipped an N-word by. That's a bad one. And I definitely didn't want to show that one to my class, although I think it would have been hilarious.
I love how, of all the things to slip, it's that.
I think that would have been a funny one to show in class. But
I don't pay attention sometimes. Okay, I don't pay attention most of the time.
But yeah, so I couldn't figure out like a rational one to show. I know there was a couple of moments. In my head, I was like, I know there were certain parts I really thought were funny that I could show, but I couldn't remember what episodes they were from. But yeah, that's our news.
That's our news because the Toku community is awful.
Really don't have anything except for old news. Something about, I saw something HGU tweet earlier about Kamen Rider Blacks. It was spelled with an X. BLXK. Kamen Rider Blax. Wow. Oh, it says right here. New HD series, Kamen Rider Blax. Kamen Rider Black and Blax RX.
A little premature on that X.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now I guess it's time for...
Oh, shit, really? Is that already?
Yeah. We really don't have any news? Wow.
No, like, the only thing is, like, that Gaim rumor about Adam and Eve, but I don't really care about that because it's a rumor.
The robots from Damwon?
And what? Oh, yeah. The AI. There weren't robots. They were AI.
Oh. They made a robot. Thingy. Yeah, what was his name?
Mizul.
No, what's the Mizul?
Mizul.
He's got the measles. He got the measles. That's what they call it when he shot off all those LBXs everywhere. The Legions, I think it was. No.
Yeah.
That was Legion was the ultimate one they made, but he had like a different one that was like a Cyclops thing that he sent around everywhere.
Vector.
Yeah, there we go.
They kind of look like Shockwave from Transformers anime.
Yeah.
Yay.
Hey, that's the news. Random Tamball summaries.
The G-Rangers are in the movie.
Yeah, there's a couple of them, and there's some voice actors from the Abra Rangers,
Geki's in it, and then the other four are voice actors.
Aren't there some Abra Ranger voice actors, or did I imagine that?
And that was a thing. I don't know if it's a... I think it's confirmed. I don't know. I don't pay attention because I don't want it to exist.
Yeah.
All I know is that he's going to actually be there. And I think I said the other four G-Rangers are going to be just the voice actors.
It'd be funny if, like, it wasn't the actual G-Rangers, but, like, they were just cameos somehow. Like, Geki was a cameo and, like, the other four voice monsters or something.
Yeah.
That would be ideal. Ideally, Geki will be the monster that they blow up. And his monster name will be Tyranno Ranger.
Poor Geki.
I like seeing, like, Toku people I hate get murdered. Like Shadow Moon getting destroyed, what was it, by the Kyuriagers? And something else happened. I think it was the GoBusters beating up the Shocker soldiers. That was satisfying. If only we could have seen Ichigo and Akaranger get beaten up by something. But they're so old. They've already on their third hip replacement to make it into these movies.
I guess we'll move on.
Guess.
Speaking of Kyuriger,
I guess. Good segue.
Yeah, because now it's time for. Is there a Soul's job now?
I don't have a job on this podcast.
This guy's just dead weight.
I give you a job and then you deny it. How dare you?
I was waiting to see if you would do it.
Join us for the most awkward podcast ever, where no one can figure out when they're supposed to speak.
I'm not doing the Kyuriger thing because I can't do that. I'm not even going to try. So I'm just going to go Kyuriger and Gaim.
Wow.
See, every time I do it, I always forget what comes next.
Kyuriger Gaim.
I love when Kevin's girlfriend was like asking him a question, and I just picture him looking at her and going, "Kyuriger!" Like, I'm just looking at her, absolutely serious, like he's going to answer her, and then doing that. It's just that image is just fantastic.
I'm pretty sure that's legit what happened.
I'm pretty sure too. I think we know Kevin too well.
Yeah.
So this was our Kyoryu Silver debut.
Kyoryu Silver.
Oh my god, it's Torin.
It should have been Daigo's dad. Because
I didn't even know they were making a 10th one.
I think they're going for the record, guys. Did you hear about this?
No way.
I feel like Torin is Toucan Sam's dad.
Brilliant. Let's move on to Gaim.
And Mad Torin is Toucan Sam's evil uncle. It's like the Lion King, but with toucans.
Ha ha ha.
what happens when you let me speak. Wasn't there a toucan in The Lion King? I have a
there
stuffed
was a zoo. I don't know if he wasn't a toucan.
Yeah,
it's a bird.
Toucans are tropical.
Oh, well, this is Disney. I don't know, but I have a bird plush somewhere. I was, like, obsessed with The Lion King when I was really little. It was, like, the first movie I saw, also. That's a history lesson. Anyway, it was a good episode. I started to distract you with my Fruit Loops stuff.
Fruit Loops and The Lion King, only on the RR podcast.
So this episode was basically just us finally getting to that point where we actually have Silver, since we've known for a couple of episodes that Torrin's Brigigas' partner.
Yeah, we got Brigigas.
A little light shed on why he wasn't Silver yet, essentially.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that Brigigas was dead.
Just that small problem.
Yeah. So a lot of it was just Torrin, you know, kind of manning up and finally realizing that he's not just a deboss, he's a curator.
Yeah.
He could be whatever he wants to be.
It seemed like it was psychological. Like he finally had that breakthrough. He was like, I can just be brave. And now my wings won't turn, and I can be all shiny. So that's what it seemed like to me. Because I was kind of expecting, for some reason, Yayoi or the doctor guy or a combination of both of them to somehow, I don't know, do something to his Galba Revolver that made it the way it is and somehow figure out a way to fix him. I don't know why, but it made more sense in my head than him just having an epiphany. And then all of a sudden it just changed his gun colors. Be funny if that happened in real life.
Well, at least we understand a little bit why he was turning the stone so much.
Yeah,
because he does mention that since he came across the dinosaurs and liked them, essentially turned into a good guy. As the boss grew stronger, he grew weaker. So, I guess, but it was really quick and simple. But I like that we actually have some sort of acknowledgement as to why he was turning into stone.
Yeah, it's funny because there was a bunch of people bitching about that, saying, and they're just going to ignore that with him being silver now. They're just going to throw that away. And, like, within the first, I think, 5 minutes, he was fighting and his wings turned to stone. It's like, suck it, Fize fans. People are so quick to judge about it and get all bitchy. And, like, I don't think there's going to be that many glaring continuity errors. This is being written by one man in a locked room. So I think he's got this shit under control. Like, I just picture him writing crazed, like, cartoonist the less guy from Beetleborg, like crazy, just off the page, and like all the other writers are knocking constantly throughout the whole year trying to get in. That's what it's been like over there.
The funny thing is, I feel like he's probably in his element doing that, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it at all.
Because he was before he started writing Toku, he was a manga artist, or not artist, but writer. So he really would. That's what manga writers do. They essentially lock themselves away in their house and write out full stories by themselves, and then that's what gets published. So, I mean, he's experienced with writing full series by himself. I imagine writing a television series is probably a little bit harder since it's a bit of a different process, but I do feel like he's probably better suited for it than others would be.
Yeah, I don't mind it at all. I think it's yielding great results. I just think it's like a funny mental picture, like the rest of the staff's really, like, you know, other people can help you. And he's like, no, I'm just going to draw. He's like Nukas and Les at the same time. He's like, draw a cartoonist, and then he sits down and draws. That's how he has to deal with it. He's split into two-part personalities.
No, he. I mean, he's doing an absolutely fantastic job.
I really like that because it makes for a lot of consistent.
Oh, there's a lot of consistent here.
I was gonna say consistent writing, and then I changed my mind.
But I mean, like we said in a couple of the past episodes, like the tiny things, like the bits about Ian's backstory with fucking Go On Black or whatever, and things like that that would normally kind of happen and then get kind of whisked away into the background, eventually get pulled back up to the forefront for whatever reason. And so it's kind of neat that he's basically the sole person writing this, because no detail is really forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that aspect a lot.
It never feels like something is left hanging for too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to kind of move back to the episode itself, I thought it was a nice cap to this whole little arc we've been having with Torin. I know the people who wanted it to be Daigo's dad for whatever reason Chenix. I'm not trying to call you out. I just got to use you as an example, okay? I'm not trying to be a dick. But you said something on Twitter that got me thinking about how Daigo's dad is more interesting than Torin. And I do agree that Daigo's dad is interesting. I don't necessarily feel like that's a solid reason to have him be Silver over Torin.
I think Torin's really interesting.
Yeah, when you think about it, we've had this whole little arc built up for Torin. He's had a little story all to himself, and when you go back and think about all of it, he's so intertwined in every single Kyoryuger, every single little bit of this story, that it makes sense for him to finally fight alongside them. And it's a nice moment when it finally happens, and when they're all sort of trying to cheer him up and talking about how every Kyoryuger has felt the same way towards him. When they first see him, despite his appearances, they just get the feeling that he's a good guy, and he kind of inspires this bravery in them. And that's why, like Daigo mentioned, he's sort of the epitome of bravery. So I don't know. That's my reasoning for why I don't necessarily agree with the complaints against Torin. I feel like he's so attached to everything, and it's been built up well. We've had a really solid little arc, and it's kept me interested for the whole time. And yeah, it just makes sense to me that Torin would be it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I like that his storyline about becoming Kyoryu Silver, and just storyline in general, wasn't just this arc. It's been going on for a while, and sprinkled throughout with mystery and his own episodes before when he was out of control. And yeah. And I like the idea of him being a Kyoryuger back when there was that brief rumor of him being gold. Granted, I'm glad we have Uchi now, but I didn't mind the idea of him being a Ranger even back then. Yes. And yeah, because I remember Chenix saying that, and I think Torin's plenty interesting. In fact, I saw someone on... Oh, I'm sorry, Brian, you can get to talk yet. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say real quick, I think some people would argue that Daigo's dad's more interesting because, as of this moment, we hardly know anything about him, and to a lot of people, the mystery of a character is what makes him interesting, as opposed to everything we know is what makes him interesting. So I think a lot of people that are saying that Daigo's dad's more interesting are basically those people that really, really like the mystery, and once everything's revealed, they just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the reasoning, but I don't agree with it at all. I think Torin's far more fascinating than Daigo's dad. I honestly feel like Daigo's dad is basically just an enigma there to move Daigo's stories along, really.
I think Daigo's dad's dead and he's just a figment of Daigo's imagination.
He may be dead. I do feel like he's probably a spirit.
Daigo never actually had a dad.
He's Immaculate Conception with a guy. He's just Jesus. He just appeared one day. It was like poof, and there's Daigo, and Daigo will become the focus of all storylines on Earth.
But to speak towards the whole like mystery thing, that is a legitimate. I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Like to want Daigo's dad to be the 10th Ranger because of the mystery, I can completely understand that. I don't feel like that's the only reason he should be there just because there's a mystery around him. Mm-hmm. I can understand the appeal. And I do want to stress again, I'm not trying to pick on Chenix here. I just got to use you as an example. There are far more people who complained with much worse reasoning than you did, trust me.
Good old forums.
I saw a bunch of people saying when it was first revealed that he was going to be Silver that, man, he doesn't even compare to Doggy Kruger. And I was like, you know what? I actually kind of like a lot about Torin better than Doggy Kruger, as much as I like
likewise, him. And I mean, like you just said, I love Kruger in both forms. But like Aerosol said before, I like the fact that Torin's so intertwined with the both sides of the story and pretty much every character. I think that's what makes him so fascinating, really.
I think his backstory is a lot more interesting than Doggy Kruger's, too.
Well, Kruger just had the whole...
Well, my wife died. Yeah, get over it.
It's kind of a cliched story.
Torin, in a way, is, too. You know, the bad guy turning good. But I just find his to be more interesting in general.
Plus, he's a bird.
Didn't Japanese Kruger's wife stay dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
As far as I remember. That's good.
Well, because I hate when they do that, because it takes away some of like the meaning behind a lot of the scenes that happen. Because they brought her name, Isenia, and SPD. She just on Kruger's ship the whole time. Anyway,
just in terms of some of the, I guess, more visually stimulating stuff. I love Torin's transformation. I love that he uses his gun as a guitar.
Oh, God, that's
kind of awesome.
I love it.
the music that plays during it is really cool. the suit actor being a little bit bigger doesn't bother me because Torin himself is kind of round,
right?
I guess. Yeah.
They wanted to have it make sense.
I feel like, and I'm sorry for bringing this up, I feel like it accentuates his crotch a little bit too much. But that's just me.
Now I feel like next time I'm going to watch it, I'm going to look at his crotch. Thanks. Like, well, let me see if this crotch at you appears.
Just look at it and go, that bird dick.
His Trinity something? Trinity Slash or something like that, which over time translated to Torinity.
I thought that was kind of clever.
I thought that was pretty cool, like how the wings sort of come out from the suit.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too.
I like the fact he still has a sword.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I want a sword.
I feel like just having watched the preview for next week, where apparently something is wrong with Soji, and everybody's changing bodies, but...
gotta have one of those.
Just a little comment that Soji gave about how Torin's swordsmanship is so impressive. I feel like... I feel like it's going to play into a bit of that, since they now have three swordsmen on the team. I was expecting something like that to happen once Uchi came on board, since he is primarily a swordsman as well. So I think that would be interesting if that's what happens, but...
You know, those episodes are pretty much a generic staple, but I'm kind of looking forward to it. Just these people have such distinct personalities. I'm kind of looking forward to see how the actors play each other. I think that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, it is a staple, but those episodes do tend to be pretty fun.
Yeah.
When the cast is as likable as this, they're really fun.
Did GoBusters have one?
Kind of. They had that paint monster thing that painted them to look like each other.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, I remember that now. Not close enough. Every Sentai has one.
Well, is it that guy?
I think so.
Couldn't resist. Okay, so this one will have a summary just because I have it, but I'm pretty quick. I don't like to last very long. Open
mine. That's what she said.
Yeah. So we have Ryugen winning his Invest battle, and he gets a shiny new strawberry lock seed. And he's later dreaming about Mai and the lady with white hair, and she warns him about the consequences. He's like, look, I don't care so long as I get that pussy. That's pretty much the way I took it. That's pretty much the way I took it. And then the next day, Kota shows up, and he warns him about the danger, but he's still all about the pussy. So he just really doesn't seem to care as long as he's getting some. Kaido's recruits from those other teams are unhappy about being treated like underlings, and they rant loudly over some yogurt. And the dealer guy hears them and gives a suspicious look. And so Baron is deciding to challenge Ryugen to a match, and he does, and he starts getting his ass kicked. So Kota decides that it's that Gaim again, and becomes Gaim. And he gets the strawberry lock seed, and they take out the two invests that Baron summoned, and they win. But then in a surprise twist, the guys whose names I don't remember transform into Brighton and Kurokage. And they're like, oh my god, more armored riders. And then, I think the last scene was, dealer guy in a limo with Zangetsu talking about how they have six Sengoku drivers in the wild. Or six Sengoku drivers to give out, five given out. So, and then they have little files on them, like they're from fucking Lightspeed Rescue. And they're like, all we need left is Dana. And so, then it ends. Dana had nothing to do with this. But aren't her boobs great? Anyway, I thought this was a pretty solid episode. It was interesting to see... I'm not sure why I didn't see it coming, but to see that the dealer guy's working with Zangetsu. Like I said, I don't know why I didn't see that coming, but I was just kind of curious how he was connected to it. And I think we talked about it last week, how Baron's now going into that world to get lock seeds, and I was just curious about what the dealer's deal was and how he was involved in anything. So, but now we know he's working for Zangetsu. So that's interesting. And they're experimenting on whoever using the drivers.
I feel stupid for not expecting it too. Like I didn't even, the thought didn't even cross my mind, really.
Yeah, me neither. I feel really stupid about it.
Well,
yep.
Well, no, I was just gonna say, part of me felt like he could have been an outside source, like from something other than the company that Zangetsu is working for. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. There was that possibility. I don't think you guys should feel stupid for thinking that.
I just kind of saw the whole Lockseed thing as a whole overall world thing, and I didn't think about... Yeah. I thought there would be more players than just the one, which is right now. I mean, not like the beat riders, but like, you know, players in the game of life and fruit. And I thought it was kind of... weird way to say it, but nice to see like a weight sort of put on the whole being a writer thing that, right, at least right now, Michi doesn't seem to fully understand. Like, he has good intentions, but I don't think he quite realizes what Kaito went through. And so not just seeing like the battles in their world, but I think Kaito even said that. He's like, it's not even just the battles here. It's like, it's so much bigger than that. And it kind of reminded me of Ryuki a lot. Just like the whole, you know, this shit's serious. So I thought that was kind of nice, the way the belt went down. And I like when Kaito decided to be Gaim again. He was like, I swear, it's not because I want to stop Michi from beaten up. It's for me, I swear it. Like, that seems so believable as you're watching him getting beaten the shit out of by Baron.
Just going off of how it kind of feels like Ryuki a bit, is something I like about this series as opposed to Ryuki. Ryuki's main writer went through this phase that I'm still uncertain if he ever truly got out of it, where he really just wasn't sure of whether or not he should fight. Which is part of the problem of writing a pacifist for your main character in a show about fighting. So a similar thing happened with Gaim here, where he just didn't want to fight anymore, and the whole anxiety of being Gaim kind of, you know, he came to the realization that it was more than just a game. Something I like is that he didn't spend most of the series sulking or being worried about it. He did kind of come to back to the realization that he kind of had to man up pretty quickly. That said, I hate Mai.
Thank you. Thank you. I was sitting here going, am I supposed to hate this bitch? Because I do. A lot.
Yeah, I watched the episode twice just so I could kind of try to understand her reasoning for backing Michi but not backing Kaito. And even still, it's like,
Michi's dick.
Even still, it's like, it's, I don't know, just the idea that he should be fighting for, that she's upset that he's fighting for other people and not for himself, seems weird.
Yeah, it's stupid.
I understand wanting to fight for your dream and what you believe in and everything, and I understand why she would respect Michi for doing that, but it just feels like there's this kind of double standard going on.
Where, how dare you fight for other people? Well, sorry for being friendly, bitch.
Well, especially in that moment when Michi was getting beat up, she was like hesitant, like, you shouldn't do this. Like, even if you're concerned about his well-being, right now this guy's getting beaten up and he's supposed to be your friend. It's like, in that moment, I would toss aside my concerns about Kaido's personal life to help him save your mutual friend. It seems so stupid. Like, she was more concerned about Kaido wanting to help others than helping Michi.
Yeah, I don't know. I do feel like she's probably not being presented in, like, quite the way the writer wants her to be. That could be a problem with the writing. I don't know. But right now, I don't like the character. I just don't really agree with her, the, like, where she's coming from and her complaints against Gaim. I don't know. She feels kind of hypocritical to me.
Yeah. Dumb bitch. Just coming back to Ryuki real quick, I think that Shoji's deal was that his main reason for being a writer was to protect people from the repercussions of the writer war. And I think the reason he was so, like, conflicted and, like, kind of wishy-washy about it is that every time he met a different writer, he would be so conflicted about whether to stop them or not, because a lot of them had really solid motivations for why they were doing it. Yeah. So I think that's kind of the way he was. Because I actually kind of liked Shoji. Like, he was really kind of whiny at times and a little bit iffy, but it was because he had so many different factors to consider in the battle. But I like that he always kind of wanted to protect people, and he kind of died doing that. Well, until he didn't. But
anyway. I mean, they definitely had different situations. It's just kind of, it's different, but it's similar.
Yeah.
And I don't have like a distaste for Ryuki. It's just, sometimes it felt like it dragged on a little too bit.
Yeah,
like
I can see that.
A little too long. And like I said, there is, you do run into a problem when you make your main character a pacifist like that, and make a character who's unsure of himself and doesn't want to fight. And if that goes on too long, it kind of makes the show feel a bit stale after a while.
Yeah, I can see that. And I don't think we're going to really face that with Kaido anymore. I think this was mainly just a realistic reaction. Like we talked last week, or one last time we watched Gaim, about how, you know, we would be really excited about being a hero, and then once you run into your first villain, you're a little bit shaken. So I think that's what that was. And Kaido just doesn't seem like that type of character.
Coda.
Did I say Kaito?
Yeah, that's Baron.
Sorry. Damn it. It's just like the damn Haruki and Hikaru. The damn people with their similar names. One of them looks like a woman.
It's okay. I was saying it too. You seem so sure of yourself.
I was confident his name was Kaido. Brian just like, look at this loser calling him Kaido. How about that, my bitch? Something else I wanted to bring up is, does anybody sometimes get a little bit of a creepy vibe from Michi?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning scene when, not very beginning
he's
scene,
he's like a
but,
super creep.
Like, sometimes he seems like a really nice guy and like he wants to help, and I don't think he's really evil or anything, but like when he had that scene with Kota about, you know, him warning him of the dangers, he seemed really creepy. Like, he's like, oh, it's fine as long as I get to sexually assault Mai. Like, that's the vibe I got from him. Like, he was so creepy about it.
I think half of it kind of has to do with his face.
Make your face better.
He's just kind of got that weird stalker face.
Like, I think if they are going for that, there could be something interesting there with if him kind of having a creepiness to him. He's creepy.
So moving on to our other writer, I continue to really like Baron. I don't know. He feels like he's the one taking the most advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
Just the way he's handling everything, it feels, it doesn't feel unreasonable for the kind of character that he's been established to be. And he's obviously kind of a jerk. Like,
yeah.
He's clearly got a reasoning that you're likely not to agree with, but you can understand why a person like that would have it. And to me, he doesn't really feel evil. Like, he still seems to be playing within the parameters of this game. He's not trying to actually harm people. But at the same time, he's taking full advantage of the fact that he is now a writer. And he even, like, mentions to Michi, when Michi's surprised that the little monster things they summoned were fully materialized, he's like, you should have, like, what do you say? Something like, you should have studied your powers more.
Yeah, something like
that. And
along those
lines. Gives you this vibe that he really, like, he's actively trying to understand what the writer's powers can do now and kind of the position he's been put in. And I like it. I like it a lot. He's a good little antagonist for however long that'll last. I really have no clue where this is going to go, but for right now, I think he's a good antithesis to the others.
You know, in that scene when he was fighting Michi, I was thinking it was interesting because he was kind of heckling Kota about how he was weak for giving up being a writer. And I was thinking, oh, it's kind of interesting how they both reacted to the situation differently. But then I realized that even though he's sort of embracing the whole being a writer thing, he hasn't seen, you know, how serious it is either. He's still viewing it in terms of the game because they... Kota's been to that world multiple times, and if he would have just transported and picked a couple more fruits and then left again, I don't think he would have quit. So, you know, Baron hasn't even seen that there's something larger going on, so I don't think he would quit like Gaim did. I think he would have definitely a different reaction, but he obviously didn't understand Kota's situation. He didn't get beat up by Zangetsu.
Yeah. And to Baron, like, seeing that Kota, you know, quit. Like, to him, that's probably, again, it's a sign of weakness. And to him, strength is respect. Strength is all that matters. So, in a weird way, he does respect Kota. But seeing him quit was probably like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, you were my main competition, kind of, but because he still looks down on him, but
yeah,
you know, he's like, I, you know, you actually had some amount of strength and then you gave it up, and to him that's like insulting almost. Did anybody else wonder why Michi didn't fire his gun during his fight with with Baron?
I actually didn't think about it.
He kept holding it backwards. I'm like, why are
he's
you
not
using?
The brightest.
All right, let's go. Grabs the gun by the barrel and just starts beating him with it. So you use this, right? Attack function. I think it's funny, like, at the beginning when you do see him using his attack, where, like, the grapes sort of bubble up. I just think it looks kind of funny.
I also enjoyed that Baron actually tried to attack Gaim while he was in mid-transformation, when he was going into Ichigo arms.
Yeah, and he just, like, the fruit bounced. I thought that was neat.
I'm trying to think what else to say. I mean,
I talked quite a lot about it.
Again, like, I could just go on about how much Greedon and Kurokage look cool. They didn't really do anything. I do want to see more of them, though. They interest me as characters, but they haven't really gotten to do much.
I really hope Bravo ends up being, like, it's hard to tell just based off his suit, but I hope he uses the Chinese sounds, because poor Ryugen's over here, like, by himself. He's the only one using this sound set. The Japanese motif has 3, the European motif has 2.
I like how whenever Gaim transforms, well, I don't necessarily like, but it's kind of funny when they play the music for a bit and they kind of show a bunch of people's reactions. It reminds me of the 3-2-1 Forze thing, when they would just randomly show 3 people or 3 things. I hope they get arm change figures at some point. It seems like a waste to come up with these riders to sell merchandise. Ooh. And then only make Greiton and Kurokage.
That's been okay. You're gonna get excited about the rider arms too.
I know Greiton got one, but I didn't know about Kurokage.
Kurokage and the Tulip Hopper.
The what?
We talked about this on the podcast.
I don't remember it. What about the other one, Spikey?
Bravo hasn't.
Okay, there we go. I got one.
Spikey.
His name is Kamen Rider Spikey. That will be his name if they did a Dragon Eye version. That's a pretty funny name. Kamen Rider Thrust. Why did they think that was a good idea?
Yeah, as far as I know, Bravo's the only one that hasn't gotten a figure announced yet. And the other 3 energy riders.
And
whatever their name ends up being.
Now silence.
Long silence.
Okay.
That's pretty much this episode in that.
Yeah. I might end up naming this one Literature after all. Literature? I fucked that one up.
Literature? That was literally? I can't even do it. I can't do it because I'm smiling and it doesn't help.
That was literature.
That was literature? The best thing I've ever heard. Literature. That sounds like someone angrily throwing like empty soda cans at a tree. Fuck you, nature. So now it's time. Oh shit! Wait. I gotta get this song ready.
Okay, hit the button now. Because now it's time for Megaforce Summaries with Shuki.
Cha! I'm holding it! Wait! There we go. I was holding it! Maybe I should start wearing that chest armor around so that I'm just always ready.
So you can always...
Even always out in public. Prepared. Just underneath my shirt, rip open my hoodie, I just got that chest armor on.
Okay. Always. So anyway, this is episode 18. We are almost done with this show. Staying on track. Also known as not staying on track. Because that's what this show did.
Pretty much.
So the Rangers have a day off. They go sandboarding because they're extreme.
Extreme kayaking!
Robo Knight doesn't know what a fun is. He's very confused. Jake teaches him how to high-five, and then Jake gets owned because, you know, getting food in your face and shit is high-class comedy.
It's gold.
So, yeah. So... Brock's in his underground thing. He's just like, let's use trains! Because apparently that's a good idea.
Just like my penis! I painted it like a train just for this event.
He's over here going, you know what? Making robots is a waste. Let's use their technology against them. So let's attack them with trains! Because everyone uses trains! Trains! And...
trains!
He's a goat now.
Yeah.
And so suddenly there's a child, and his mom's on the train, and they're at the train station waiting for her. And the train gets taken over by a metal owl. She's, like, in this... The cockpit of the train is fucking huge. It's like a goddamn command center, and she just slashes the shit out of everything. But apparently these workers can fix it. Because they fix it. And it might not even been the cockpit of a train. I don't know. It might have been the train station itself. Who knows?
I think it was.
Shut up.
They have an entire office building attached to the front of this train.
So the Rangers arrive. There's fighting. Humans suck. Alice hates Robo Knight. The kids see the kids. The kid, they're singular, who slips between being British and not being British.
Are you my mommy?
Sees Robo Knight, and he thinks Robo Knight's a cop. And cops, or cops? Yes, Robo Knight is named Cops. So Robo Knight's like, no, I'm a protector. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And he's like, well, I'm lonely because I miss my mommy, and she's on the train. And
are
like,
you my mommy?
What is lonely? And so Robo Knight finds Alice again, and there's something about bombs, ultra power, Lee's die. And Robo Knight is just like, why you hate humans so much? And they fight more. And Robo Knight's like, human feelings are cool. And Metal Alice dies, except she doesn't die. So she blows up, but she's okay. And then
she's like the damn Breedle brothers.
The Zom bolt bat things to make herself big. So she's all huge and shit. And they're like, oh no, the train's all broken and... Or the train, the track is all broken and shit. What are we gonna do? And so
Tommy!
This is like, your determination and perseverance has earned you a new power. And so they get fucking Ghost Age Jet because they need to sell a toy, so they need to use them once.
A toy that you can only get online right now.
Yeah, a toy that you're never going to find in a store, so good luck with that, kids. So Ghost Age Jet appears, and the train's saved because they drive over the heads. Because that's a smooth surface, apparently. The train doesn't get derailed at all. So huge metal Alice, and then they make the Ghost Age Jet Megazord and Ghost Age Grand Megazord, and then Alice dies again, but then she's not dead. She gets regenerated in the underground water base thing. It's like, oh no, I failed. And Brock's like, oh, fuck you. And then it ends.
Pretty much exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's verbatim.
Robo and I did try to shoot Jake.
Oh, yeah.
Like, go on, shoot. And then he's like, all right. Insist.
If you insist. That was pretty funny. Except I wish he like pointed at Troy or something. That would have been more entertaining to me. But yeah. So it wasn't an awful episode or anything, but it was just kind of one of those run-of-the-mill Ranger episodes.
It was so preachy. It was annoying. Like, we get it. Humans are good.
I feel like it's extra preachy because that's kind of been the basis of this entire arc with Metal Alice. Has just been, humans are good. Humans rock. Yay, humans.
Humans for the win!
And so it's kind of just kind of sort of the same thing over and over again. And I'm normally not super hard on episodes like these, but when you're running a 20-episode show, having the same sort of moral, it's like there's billions of morals that you could display in a kid's show like this, and yet they just kind of continuously choose the yay friendship, yay humans are good, emotions, hurrah. It's just like they just continuously kind of preach the same moral over and over again. And when you focus on a moral like teamwork and friendship in a show that's based around teamwork and friendship, and so it's like double
same friendship.
Moral in the same show shoved down your throat directly. So that gets kind of irritating, particularly in Megaforce is pretty heavy in that.
You know, in general, PR does that. And they don't have to, because there's plenty of shows that will somehow have some sort of moral lesson or something like that without being so preachy. Like, it will just kind of be obvious if you're paying attention to the story, instead of, like, constantly preaching at the villain about stuff. It's really annoying. And I mentioned this on Twitter, but whenever they show civilians in the last few years in Megaforce and Samurai, don't they just seem so Stepford-y? They seem so fake. Like, I know they don't get good actors.
I was watching with Jeff, and I pointed this out, that between the father and the mother, there was no way they could have had that kid. Like, first of all, the kid had, like, this weird British accent that kind of slipped in and out. And neither the father nor the mother had an accent remotely close to that. And there was, like, between the skin tone and the hair color, it wouldn't have worked, genetically speaking.
I think it's funny that this kid tried to hide his accent, but they just completely gave up on kid Jaden. Like, they were like, you know what, just fucking speak. It doesn't matter. Just pretend Jaden had a speech impediment. But yeah, I don't know, like, that's one of the problems is with the last few years in general. Like, even though this year they felt a little more a part of the world than the Samurai Rangers did, is that the towns and the city or whatever still feel so, it feels so disconnected. And, like, when they show the people, they seem so Stepfordy and fake. Like, they're not going to get the best background people, but it seems so put on. And it's so weird. Like, I actually watched a few episodes of MMPR this week when they did that 90s thing.
Answer the damn phone.
And, sorry. Hello? We are filming right now. And even with as bad as MMPR could be, they still had more of a sense of place in Angel Grove, where it felt like an actual place, and they didn't have the background people talk very often, which was a smart move. And I don't know, there's just something very off at times about the last few years in terms of them feeling a part of the real world, which the MMPR actually got right. So You know what they didn't get right was those Evil Ranger suits.
Oh my god.
They didn't even have the masks on right. One of the eyes was like up on the forehead. Like you could at least put the mask on properly. The mouth's down on the neck. It's like, geez, what are you doing?
Why would they do that? I mean,
but it felt so strange, and it was an okay episode. It's still probably one of my least favorites. I still think it's ridiculous that we're doing an episode like this when we have two episodes left. Shit should be getting real.
Should be real next episode, apparently.
I can't remember how it was in regular Samurai, because that was very different, because it was essentially one show, but this one's kind of like essentially two parts. So this one's sort of ending more like a season, so they should have been getting really sooner. Like, Super Samurai, the whole last five or so episodes were all kind of climaxy, and this was just so boring.
I've actually overall enjoyed Super Samurai more than Megaforce.
I think that they had a better story, but I think that the cast had better interactions off the bat. Like, their dialogue seemed more realistic.
Megaforce?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that they had a better... I think that the Samurai Rangers eventually got into a chemistry, and, like, around Super Samurai, things felt better. But, like, right off the bat, Megaforce, I thought, had a better interaction, where they would say stuff I felt like actual normal people would say, and it didn't feel like they were reading TV Neon subs out loud. Because everything felt really awkward at the beginning of Samurai, you have to admit. Like,
oh, yeah.
The chemistry was really weird, and in this one, the chemistry was pretty solid off the bat. Anyway, so finale pretty soon, a couple more episodes and the Christmas special, and then Super Mega Force. Unlock the power. Oh, I did a few years ago, I just can't escape it. You're going to be doing GoBusters for 2 years. The ship might as well just sink.
Well, seriously, like I did, like, math, which was incredible for me. And... So, like, if we do GoBusters for 2 years, when we start Kyoryuger, which is Sentai 37, they'll be doing, like, the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
And if they keep doing the 2 years, we're perpetually always going to be an additional year behind where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, we're just continuing creating more space.
And it's not... There's a point where you're so far behind that... You just kind of lose it.
You know, on the one hand, it's kind of nice to not have the immediate year air. Because, like, you know, you would just finish the Sentai and then you'd be watching those suits all over again. So it doesn't make it... It seems a little fresher. You know, because... Except for Gokaiger, which just won't leave. But, you know, we hadn't seen the Ghost Ager suits in a while. But it's to the point where it's, like, really far behind. It's not just, like, a two-year thing. But, like, every year they can adding to it because the two-year thing and... Just the two-year thing, and the way they're writing it, it's not worth it to watch for the 2 years.
I think the only benefit that they got going right now is that it's been so long since I've seen the Sentai versions that I forget that they even were Sentai versions.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't so much a Samurai, because Samurai just kind of, like, bled the fact that they were adapting things so closely.
Mm.
But with Megaforce, it's a little bit harder to tell in certain situations, because one, Ghost I didn't pay too much attention to Ghost Sager in the first place, and it's been so long since I've seen anything involving Ghost Sager that I forget whether it was a plot or not. Not that it makes it any more enjoyable, but...
Yeah, because Ghost Sager was pretty bare bones. It was a lot of, like, filler, and there wasn't a lot going on for a lot of time, and not really that memorable of filler. Because, like, you know, Samurai followed Shinkengers, and so you could remember the plot points fairly easily when they got to them, and they used a lot of the memorable filler episodes, so you would remember it. But Megaforce, or Ghost Sager, was just kind of a lot of nothing for a long time. I'm still pissed they never used the air conditioning episode. They should have used that for the finale of Megaforce. In order to get the air conditioning back, we need to turn into pirates! That should have been the climax.
Hell yeah.
They don't know how to keep their climaxes going as long as Superhero Tyson's.
17 minutes?
The damn hell?
Okay. Because now it's time for ramble, ramble, ramble time.
C. No?
No.
Okay.
What happened to A and B?
A,
I get it.
A, 8, B.
Because 7, 8, 9. Get it?
Oh, God. My Doctor Who calendar is too far to the right. It's bothering me.
For some reason, I took that to mean like it was too far in the future for some reason. Like, because it's a time-traveling calendar. They should make the Doctor Who calendars like that and just assign it like a random month and year every time you turn it. Like, it'll be like in February 1963, and then the next thing you know, you're in like December 2057. Brilliant. In a couple weeks, we'll have Day of the Doctor to talk about.
That'll be fun.
It's like Day of the Dino, but with doctors.
Have you guys watched the trailers?
Yeah.
I watched one of the trailers. I don't think I watched the newest one.
I watched like the 42nd one, and there was like a one that was like a little over a minute, and that was fun. I really liked seeing them comparing sonic screwdrivers.
Yeah. I was going to say, I have to admit, the little, just them looking at each other or making, like, noises, because they didn't really even say anything to each other, but 10th and 11th, just in the trailers alone, had some amusing little interactions.
Like, you redecorated. I don't like it.
Yeah, I love that one.
I was like, I agree. I like the one in between the two. Like, I like the crazy one where, like, the knobs were bathtub things. And, like,
well, it's
so
like the TARDIS redesign seems so unnecessary.
Yeah.
So, I was very much amused by 10th just not liking the TARDIS design.
Yeah. I think it'll be fun. I think I said on Twitter, like, more so than the storyline, I'm just kind of looking forward to seeing 11 and 10 interact, because they're both, they can both be really funny doctors and, like, really quirky, and I just think it'll be funny to see them talk. Starring David Tennant, Matt Smith, and should have been Christopher Eccleston, but instead they just got this old guy instead. Like, I like the idea behind it, and I think it'll be kind of interesting to see, but it's just kind of obvious that they were supposed to get 9. And they're just like, well, you know what? We'll just cast some old dude.
Well,
it'll be fine.
It's John Hurt. He's kind of famous, but...
I'd never heard of him until this happened.
Okay.
So he's not very... He must not be very famous. But still, I mean, I think it's an interesting approach. I just think it's kind of funny. I'm glad they committed to whatever story they had, though. Anyway, so this is the Pokemon discussion when we talk about Doctor Who.
Lovely.
It's going to be in theaters, not Pokemon, but Doctor Who. I'm not going
to
go see it.
And then there's just silence. You guys really have something to talk about.
I'm probably just going to watch it from home, because I'd rather watch it from the comfort of home. I don't know if you guys are going to go see it in theaters. Again, not Pokemon.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any near me.
There's a couple near me, but I don't know. And it's in 3D, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of it.
I doubt it's showing here.
Plus, there might be something else on that night. What day is the 23rd? Crap, there's all these documents up. It is a Saturday. Oh, there's nothing else on Saturdays. Damn it, you're not giving me very much of an excuse. Anyway, I don't even remember what Pokemon was about this week.
It was about...
Nice call, Brian.
CB.net.
Wait, I can think of it before. Damn it, no, I can't.
Go-Goat.
Oh, yeah, that little dumbass kid, because, like, Go-Goat can feel things with its horns or something, and it felt its feelings or something. It was stupid. I thought it was going to be one of those where she's like, oh, the Go-Goat seems to get along with you, you should just take it. And I was going to be mad, because I want Go-Goat to ride along with them. And Ash is like, Go-Goat's a grass type? Like, well, yeah, you idiot. Well, they didn't give us a guide, so we didn't know anything. Speaking of, apparently the second guide comes out in January. Did anybody see that? The Pokedex and the post-game.
In January?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
I know. Like, how long do they think it takes us to complete it? Once you get past the gap between the first and second badges, you could beat it in 15 minutes. I don't know what they think takes so long. That's really annoying that they do that now. Because I really wanted to see all the pictures and have a book where I could just look at Pokemon pictures like a child. Why can't I have the things that I want? But yeah, that's a thing. And I think it's going to be like the same size as this one. I miss the bigger guides. Size matters, guys. Anyway, I don't have too much else to say about Pokemon, because obviously I didn't remember it. It was just an episode. I like Go-Goat because I have one. Can we go on to Ben 10?
Yeah.
Sure.
We did get to see Kevin and Rook's adventures.
Yeah, I like that.
That was really cool. Like, it started, I was like, wait, are they going to the car show? They're going to the car show. Yes!
And it was really fun. I liked the episode. I like kind of seeing a little bit of a flashback Kevin from when he was little and using the Null Void. Just a funny place to be when you're little.
I actually like that about this episode and last episode, that we're getting the flashbacks about Kevin and Glenn instead of just Ben.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see more of that happen.
Yeah, me too.
Especially with Kevin, because admittedly, Gwen's not overly interesting.
Yeah.
Since we already kind of know her past. But with Kevin, there's kind of this gap that we don't know about.
Yeah, because if I remember right, I think it was Ultimate Alien, where we got to see Kevin in the Null Void a little bit, and like that guy helped him like control his monster form, and then he broke out. But there's like this huge gap of what he did in between then. I was trying to figure out when this took place. Like, I guess before that or in between that? I don't know. I forgot about it because I haven't watched those episodes in a long time. But
For fun, I went on Wikipedia and looked at the production order, and it's all fucked up again. It's really
funny. Oh, my God. This episode actually takes place during Alien Force. But yeah, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, that's what I always say when I can't think of anything else. But it was a fun episode. What was I going to say? I like that they kept in, like, with the continuity of when Rook called Ben.
Yeah.
Like, the other end of the conversation. Yeah. I thought that was fun. And then, obviously, Ben showed up at the end, and he transformed into something. Oh, yeah, Edel, and he ate Kevin's car. Poor Kevin's car always gets destroyed. Oh, and we got the first...
But then he transformed into Upgrade, and we had a mech battle.
The first transformation of Upgrade in the regular series since the original series. No, like, that's... He got all of Alien Force, all of Ultimate Alien, he never used it. He used it in the Generator Rex special.
Yeah.
But not in the regular series.
I didn't even think about that.
And it's really unfortunate because he's a very useful alien.
Yeah, he's kind of OP.
But, they never used him. I mean, they gave him a redesign and he was in the opening of Ultimate Alien, but they never used him because of the exception of Generator X, and so this was the first debut of it. And he's got the Omnitrix on his little eye hole now.
Is this the first time? Like, he didn't transform at all with, like, the malware arc?
I don't think so.
Maybe I'm just thinking that would make sense.
Yeah, I mean,
they didn't do it.
I don't even think he went Upgrade in the flashbacks. I don't know why they didn't want to use them so bad. Because it's not like they have to hire a different voice, because it's just Ben's voice. Like, but computerized. So.
Yeah, this is the first debut of 16-year-old Upgrade.
Huh. Did he ever transform into him during the flashbacks?
Let me check.
I feel like there was something else, but I can't. Oh, what was the deal with the two little jerry rigs?
What do you mean?
The two brothers that were, like, haggling?
I thought it was just neat to see different, like, aliens of Ben's race in the world.
But it seemed weird that we had two jerry rigs, because it was very...
It seemed like it was supposed to be a reference to something to me.
Oh, well, they just seem so similar to the two gray matter.
Maybe that was the point. I don't know, but I just always think it's neat to see like Ben's transformations out in the world and like kind of looking vastly different. Did you, I never noticed before that Tetramand commander guy was missing an arm. I don't know why I never noticed that.
Yeah, he's missing an arm and an eye.
I feel like he's
missing something else too.
Probably his penis. You're right. Okay.
One of them.
One of them. Oh God.
Why? Don't call him forearms for nothing.
What?
I don't even know what that means.
Why? But I like it.
They're not talking about their actual arms.
Oh my God. On the Tetraman planet, penises are called arms and arms are called penises. Let go of my penis. They grab his arm. Sorry. Oh, good times. Next week, I don't know if we must have talked about this before we hit record, but it's the Albedo episode, which I'm looking forward to. Yeah. Apparently, he still has the ultimate transformations.
Well, we knew, like, a while back, we got those glimpses at the
pictures.
The updated designs for some of them.
I was trying to think of like how he left off, because he originally had the synced Omnitrix that was fake, and then Ben removed that, and then he got the Ultimatrix and Ben removed that, and then he had like those alien circus buddies or something, and he was trying to make a machine to turn himself back, but Ben like thwarted it, and somehow he ended up with the ability to just switch between Ben's transformations at will. But I just didn't remember if he had the ultimate powers or not. But I guess he would still retain it, even though Ben doesn't have it.
There's a chance that maybe he stole it.
That's true. I think there was like a poster I saw where he's
the
like
Ultimatrix didn't. It didn't get destroyed. It just got replaced.
It got destroyed.
Oh no.
That's what. Well, Derek White apparently doesn't like it very much, and he said that Albedo. What's his name? Azmuth took it back to whatever planet he lives on and destroyed it. But there's a chance Albedo has it. I mean, has the powers. But I did see, I'm going to look it up on Benton Wiki. I thought I saw like a little promotional like poster thingy that showed him with some sort of red Omnitrix.
Yeah, he's got it.
But I like the idea of him having the ultimate transformations, because it kind of makes him more of a threat, which was kind of neat. When he first debuted, the Ultimatrix was, you know, Ben just assumed it was going to be Humongousaur versus Humongousaur, and then he went Ultimate Humongousaur.
Plus, it's a nice way of showing off the updated looks for all the Ultimate aliens without Ben having to have it.
Yeah. And it's not like he's too overpowered where he would beat Ben like really easily, because I mean if Ben transforms into Humongousaur and Albedo's using Ultimate Humongousaur, sure he'll win, but Ben will just have to use a different alien like way big and just kick him out of the way.
Punt.
Hey Ben 10 toys, why don't you start coming out again? That would be great.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know why they stopped. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. Here's a little poster. Yeah, he's got a little. It's like an Omnitrix on his hand, on the back of his hand.
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. Based on the previous,
like his forms show up with the Omnitrix symbol.
Yeah. I like how they changed his jacket to have the 10 like backwards, like a mirrored effect. I thought that was kind of a nice touch, and he's still wearing the old jacket that Ben used to have. But see, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be good. Okay, so what else now? Turtles? This week was Mutagen Man. Mutagen Man is the version that Aaron likes because it's about cows. Doesn't all have to be cow stuff. I liked this episode. I found Mutagen Man to be kind of disturbing. Like his voice was like perfect for how disturbing he is, and just thinking about it, like the way he came to be and his look, it's just all very unnerving.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, like, because he was such a normal dude. Like, he was kind of annoying, and got in the way a lot. But he was such a normal guy. It's not just like some random squirrel that licked mutagen. Like, this was a guy they knew, and we'd seen him in several episodes, and he was just an average guy, and he was so nice.
He was like a reoccurring comic relief character. He's just sort of this dorky guy, and you don't really expect stuff to happen to that kind of character.
Yeah.
So when it does, it's like, oh, wow. That, huh. And not to mention, his mind is like
warped.
Not quite there. So he's somewhat deranged, too.
Yeah, because after they transformed him last season, he just kind of sat on that shelf. So he's just been sitting there becoming more deranged. And he fixated on April. And now he just keeps drinking mutagen. They just kept leaving him with mutagen. This will be fine. Let me just place his head down here by this mutagen canister. It'll be fine. But yeah, it's very, very disturbing. But it makes for a really interesting story. Damn it, Brian. I wonder if they'll ever cure him or he'll stay this way.
Yeah.
Or get...
I like how they froze him and they just left him in the alleyway. I'm assuming they scooped him up, but...
And Donnie mentioned that he thinks his Mugen Man's DNA might be able to give him some kind of clue to an antidote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of neat that they're still kind of using him to further that plot.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming, I guess they will cure him at some point, but I was just wondering, like, if they were going to completely cure him or they might cure his mind, leave him this way, and he might fight crime as a weird freak. I don't know. I don't know. I think it'd be kind of funny to see him stay that way and funny to see April's dad stay as a bat but get his brain back and just try to be an average dad while coping with being a mutant bat. could be tons of fun. And we got the debut of Casey, a.k.a. not Kevin Levin. I felt like he should have sounded like Kevin. But we
you
already
know what?
Got
I had the same feeling.
But he didn't sound
like...
He
sounds like Josh instead.
Who's Josh?
Josh Peck.
Oh, that who voices him?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I don't know things.
But yeah, he did have a very Kevin Levin look to him.
Yeah. And his personality kind of fits that, so I felt like his voice should have been that, but it's already Mikey's.
I don't know. He seemed kind of like a dweeb, almost.
Like a douchebag.
Like he's a bit of a punk, obviously. But
he's like April wants the D.
I don't know. I think it's because he's. I think it's because we're seeing like a much younger Casey Jones than what I'm assuming has showed up in the other series because. You know, I at least know of Casey Jones and know how he should be, and he seems a lot younger and a lot more, well, like
he's
a teenager.
He's always the same age relative of April.
Because April is usually older. You know, something I really haven't talked about a lot since we started the season is it's kind of interesting that they actually have kept April so separate from the group. Like, that's such a sort of a major change to, like, the status quo of the show, because she was always around before, and she's been mad at him all season long and really hasn't shown up as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's interesting that they've kind of kept that for a while, and it's kind of leading her to introduce Casey's character and have her own little side thing going on. But she's still, like, a ninja, but she calls herself a Kuno bitch or whatever. And she carries around a really sharp tile that she throws at people. Yep.
Oh my.
Oh my? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh my.
I don't know. What did you guys like Casey?
Oh yeah.
I did
anyway.
I mean, I thought he was kind of a douche.
Yeah. Like I said, he seemed like kind of a dweeb to me. I don't know. I'm not saying that's bad. It's just I don't know. I guess I expected his first appearance to be a little more impactful, but...
No, he's just a stupid kid that wants to play hockey.
Yeah. We'll see. Also, like, I feel like I'm pulling a Zeron here, but his teeth bugged me.
Yeah, they kind of do. I mean, I get it's for the whole hockey effect, but it's like Boken Black all over again. And I hate it.
Couple weeks from now, Aristotle's was like, I stopped watching it. Why? Because of Casey's teeth. You know, rational reasons.
Regions?
Regions. Damn it. Didn't even got that. Speaking of didn't even gotting, Cora? That was
what
a good
segue.
That's my bitch. It's transitions that don't make any sense.
What the hell, dude?
You seemed offended. Like it was like almost like I just made a Blue's Clues joke. That's how it got up in here. Cat started shaking her candy in my face.
So, I was not expecting
Iroh.
What we got in this episode.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. He just showed up and I was all happy. It was like everything was right in the world.
I wanted to say something about on Twitter, but I'm like, I don't want to ruin that. Like, that's the one thing I won't spoil, because no one expects Mako to just kind of, did I say, yeah,
Mako.
Mako?
No one expects Mako to be
the voice
in the show
actor. Well, the old voice
actor.
Yeah,
I was going to say he was voiced by Mako, he's not Mako. Mako's someone else.
I wasn't expecting him to show up. No one was.
Like, I didn't even hear, like, a rumor or anything. It just happened.
Yeah, because I didn't... And I also
forgot
didn't
what being surprised
it.
Felt like after following, like, Toku so long.
It's a nice feeling.
But, yeah, I didn't even, like... Because even though he did some sort of spiritual stuff, I didn't even think about it. Like, it didn't even cross my mind. You know, I think Kevin mentioned last week that he might run into that spirit friend he made when he was Wong, but didn't that dude die?
Did he? I don't remember.
Well, because what's his name? I always forget Rava's counterpart. What's his name? Tuck.
The weasel thing? Or
yeah.
Not really weasel.
Well, not his name, but...
He didn't die. He just went back to the spirit
was,
realm.
Did they show him crossing back?
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering because that guy, the evil Rava, was talking about... To Wong about how his friends died, like right after he saw the confrontation between his friends from his former village and his spirit friends.
I imagine you meant just the humans.
Yeah, he's like, your spirit friends killed your other friends, so they're your only friends now. Okay, there can only be one group. But I couldn't remember whether we saw them later. But anyway, if he was alive, I kind of expected to maybe see him or something. But I did not expect Iroh to just come up and be like, hello. Hi, Iroh here.
I will say, speaking of Mako, the voice actor, that is the one thing that is kind of unfortunate about this. Cause I couldn't get over the fact that he sounded different.
Yeah.
Which that's such a small thing, but it is just one of those, like, you're so used to a character sounding one way.
Yeah.
And now he's a different way. So.
I get that all the time. Especially with all the voice changes with the Ben 10 aliens. But it was still nice to see him. But regardless of that, it was a great episode, even if he wasn't there, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I was happy to see him, I was kind of annoyed at the people saying that this was the only good or the best episode of Korra solely because he appeared. Because there's been a lot of
people
good stuff.
Said that?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
But I was like, it's not like I wasn't happy to see him, but I hate those people that only think an episode of Korra is good if something from the original series happens. But I thought it was really neat. I was kind of sort of confused at first when Korra turned into a baby Korra. I was like, oh my god, it's Rugrats in reverse. All growed down. But it kind of made sense when he said, like, what you feel becomes reality, and she kind of felt lost and scared like a kid. And yeah. I like how... when she took that dragon bird up, like, that moment when they all merged and then she turned around and she was an adult again, it was very neat, like, the way those journeys converged and everything, and yeah. It was very, very cool.
That is one really, like you said, neat thing about the spirit world that we've been seeing. There's a lot of like visual symbolism. So like, yeah, we're dealing with little kid Cora for most of the episode, but that's really just because she's kind of in this position where she kind of feels like a little kid. Like you said, she's lost and scared, and she's kind of throwing a little hissy fit at the little tea party.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden storm clouds come up, and like you said, when she turned around, she was an adult and everything. It felt like she had actually kind of learned that lesson and kind of grew a bit, which obviously is the point. But
yeah, because it was kind of like, because she was carrying the baby bird too, and then it grew up into a big bird, and it was just kind of a big bird. It grew up into a big bird. It was like, hi. But I just thought it was really cool the way they kind of, you know, visualized that. And it was just really cool in general, like with those scenes and the visuals themselves, how everything looked in the world, and like the music. It was like one of those moments where I just really loved the show because everything just blends together so well, and like how epic it was when she arrived on the bird at the spirit portals with epic music playing. And and then meanwhile, what's her name? Ichi? No. Is that right? The daughter.
I can't think of her name.
I know. All I had it in my head, and
everyone just kept talking.
Brian's like, everyone needs to shut up so I can think.
Yeah. Her.
Yeah. She went to that library from the first series with the owl that was evil, and then it sank to the spirit world.
It took me a second to realize where she was.
Janora.
Because it feels like it's been so long since that episode from the original series.
It's been so long in world too. And he thought that radio had like a tiny man screaming out.
I love that part.
But he's working for Unalaq because he's a dick owl.
He just like, he gives this snide look at that dog wolf thing, and he just like puts his head down and walks away. It was really funny. I had a feeling that she would end up getting left behind. And obviously that turned out to be true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what to say about it aside from she got left behind.
And it was so shitty for Cora because she didn't have any powers. All she could do was jump around fancifully while Unalaq beat her and then tried to, like, soul bend her to get rid of her soul.
He's an asshole.
Like, I like how at the beginning it was kind of like, I don't know, maybe he's in the right place, and now he's just full-on dick mode. He don't give a fuck anymore. It's like, I'm evil, deal with it, whatever.
Wasn't the previous bad guy, like, quasi-bad guy, Tarlok?
That was his brother. Yeah. Wait, was Tarlok? Crap. Yeah, Tarlok, it was his brother, because I was trying to remember, there was the dad, too, was the main reason behind it. Tarlok was more... He was more gray by the end, because compared to, Amon.
I'm just saying we have a Tarlok and an Unalaq.
Well, yeah.
The moral of the story is don't trust anyone with a lock in their name.
The moral of the story is don't trust waterbenders. Yeah, I was going to say, waterbenders are all evil, apparently.
That is something a lot of people have kind of brought up, that, like the first season, we have two waterbenders brothers, and they were sort of at the center of the ongoing plot. Admittedly, Korra's dad has kind of gone into the background now, whereas her uncle is the main douche that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
But like you said, Tarlok.
Tar.
Well, they all have lock in their name. I can't tell if I'm using the right one or not. But
it just sounded funny, like you were trying to sound it out.
But like you said, he did seem a little more gray. He was a bit more like a corrupt politician than he was this crazy dude who wanted to take over the world.
Yeah.
Which was Amon.
I didn't even think about, I mean, I thought about the waterbending thing, like how we have another antagonist as a waterbender, but I didn't even think about the whole brothers thing and kind of how the similarities was it, like ever since we've gotten this whole Rava, the other one thing, whose name I can never remember. But I'm pretty much going to assume that he's going to get released, because otherwise it would be a big disappointment if the climactic battle was just between Korra and Unalaq. I think it's going to be a big showdown, like the first Harmonic Convergence showdown that actually had a battle in forever. So, I think that's what's going to happen.
I forgot how many episodes we have left.
I think 3? I think the last one was 10, so I think it's 13 episodes, or is it 14? No, it's 13, because I think last season was 12, and I remember this season's one more than last. But it's supposed to be an hour. Not tomorrow. A couple days for us. It's like the day of release for this, but...
Hmm.
But yeah, I'm just kind of assuming... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I know we're kind of hitting a high point, but it doesn't feel like it should be ending soon.
Yeah, they're short seasons.
I mean, there's always a chance that something like some part of it will fade into the next season and they'll do it a bit more in the style of the original series, since obviously the first season was meant to be so standalone.
Yeah, it was just meant to be the one miniseries, and I think we should get a faster turnaround because I think they're working on books 2 and 3 at the same time, so I don't think we'll be waiting a full year again. I'm kind of hoping for I don't know, maybe late spring? Like, maybe... I think I'm trying to remember when Korra first debuted. Wasn't it around, like, March? It was between March, April, or May, or something like that. Because it was, like, right before summer, because it aired partly in summer. So, I'm kind of hoping then, maybe. Or maybe in summer. I don't know. But I don't think it'll be a full year again. Because they worked on 2 and 3 at the same time, and I'm assuming when that's done, they'll do 4, because it's through 4. But yeah, it seems weird if there's 3 episodes left that tomorrow's or this week's would be an hour, because then that would only leave 1 episode on its own, which would seem weird as opposed to like an hour finale, unless the hour resolves the main plot and the finale episode sort of unconnected in a way, because I've seen shows do stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know,
but I'm looking forward to it.
It's 2 hours. There's going to be an hour next week and an hour the following week, and then it ends.
Oh, I was like, 2 hours? I don't know if I can handle it. 2 hours of that, and then Raising Hope? I'm going to go crazy.
11 and 12 air on the 15th, and then 13 and 14 air on the 22nd.
Okay, so it is 14. I kept thinking 13. Okay, well, that's cool. It's kind of
so
sad.
We're going to have like a Korra finale end day, then Doctor to discuss on the same podcast.
Oh, man.
It's a lot of finale.
But I was gonna say, it's kind of sad in one way because it stretches it out, or it makes it shorter instead of stretching it out, but it's kind of nice to have an hour of Korra too, because it always feels so short. Like, I get so into the episodes and then it's over.
Yeah.
Korra the Explorer. One question. Mako and everybody else wasn't in this episode at all, were they?
No, not really.
I couldn't remember because I feel like it was mainly the spirit stuff. Oh, and I think that's it for ramble time.
Dan Ball.
Yeah, that's right. Damn it. You guys watched it, obviously, unless you're just reminding me of it. I'm the only one that watched it.
This, it has morphed into the Dan Ball that we know and love.
shit's getting real now. It's funny because I think in the first episode I thought, now that they know that he has the parasite key. Can't they just, do they have to wait for the war? Can they just steal from him outright? Yep, just hire an evil butler that no one suspected. Did anybody see that coming? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, talk about things we didn't expect.
Like, I always thought he was creepy, but I didn't know he was like a double agent douchebag.
The only time I saw it coming was when he knocked on the door to the guy's place and was like, we need to talk. I'm like, something's going to happen. Why would the butler need to talk to him? Like, I knew something was wrong then, but throughout the whole show, no suspicion at all. He was just the butler. Like, the butler always did it. We should know this. But...
like, I always thought he was creepy. He had that big-ass nose and shit.
You should have known he was a liar with a nose like that. It's Pinocchio taught us nothing. But yeah, oh. I was not expecting that. And apparently, Saladi Kreisler is, like, 67 years old or something like that.
No, he was born, in the 60s. They said he should be 90.
Oh, Jesus.
Though, didn't they say that they suspect that he might be using a different name?
Yeah, because they said, who is he, the real guy?
Or he's a robot.
His eyes look like red and black Pokeballs.
He did look at those little, like, monitor mons and, like, stop them cold with his mind, so he very well could be a robot. He's creepy as fuck. And I don't like that his name is taken over the Kaido Jin naming thing, where everyone just goes, Saladi Kreisler. They say it so dramatic, like, whenever they run into him or are talking about him. Hey, did you guys hear about that new professor? Saladi Kreisler. And then they go back to a normal tone. But yeah, and they have all the parasite keys, and they're part of the World Savers, which is like one step above Life Savers. Yeah, shit's getting real.
Like, it was funny because the episode, was it 29, I think? 30? 30. Ended, and I was like, this is Dan Ball.
Yeah, I know, because that's what I was thinking in the episode. They said he's a terrorist organization. I was like, there it is. This would not be Dan Ball without the terrorists being in here. It would not be a children's show about robots without terrorism.
It was funny because we spent all this time discussing how it was a very different take on the world of Dan Ball, and then, bam, there's a terrorist.
Yep, terrorist organization. This time
apparently they've been around for a really long time, too.
Yeah, that butler. I mean, that butler's like 200 years old. And
look at him. Look at him.
You don't get a nose that big by not living 200 years.
His nose is 300.
His nose was born first.
But yeah, it was very familiar with the... I was wondering when that was going to happen. I mean, obviously, all along, you had like those sort of war elements, so... And with all the bandits and whatnot, it was along the lines of it. But the reveal of a terrorist organization was very familiar, and at least this time it wasn't Bond's dad. But yeah, was Kaido Jin even in these episodes? That's what all
he was
I
there
really
briefly.
He needs to he do more like, shit.
He was standing over the teacher chick, like, oh, something. Something Kaido Jin,
and her dad's missing, just like Bond's was. It was it's very simple setup.
Apparently, like Trapped. Connected to the to whatever's powering.
How are you connected to a computer like that? Like you just like plug the computer into your skull.
You know what it reminded me of when they were describing it? I can't remember who it was, but Zetman. Somebody was like a head. Do you remember, it was like somebody's head was connected to a computer system.
I remember that. That show was stupid.
That show was... I still don't know how I feel about it. Like, just thinking about it now, I'm getting a weird vibe. God, that show was fucked up. Anyway, his girlfriend just turns into a giant tick, like, all of a sudden. Anyway, that's here nor there. But, like, her... When they described it, it also reminded me of Bond's story about her dad just going somewhere and all of a sudden being trapped in a laboratory, being forced to do things. Maybe she's Bond's sister. Bum bum bum.
Bum bum bum.
Ba 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 ba.
Okay.
So, we did watch two episodes.
Yeah.
29, the one before everything kind of went down, which was about Hojo's new mech and the mechanic building it. I actually really liked that one. I I don't know. I like seeing the background on some of the other characters, and obviously she has a tie-in to what's-his-face who used Joker from the original series.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, overall, that was a pretty solid one. It was a nice little build-up to Hojo's new mech, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I really liked that one saw on the show. And that one guy, like, wouldn't accept him at first, and then he got saved, and I can never remember his name, even though he's been around forever. Glasses guy who had the parasite key.
Rikia.
Yeah, that's his name. First name, glasses guy. Last name, who had the parasite key. No, wait, last name, had the parasite key. Middle name, who? Sorry, I got that wrong. Anyway, these are some good episodes.
Yeah, things are building up.
I wonder, like, I'm assuming that in the next little batch here, this storyline will be wrapped up, so I'm wondering what the next storyline is. Because if I remember right, both of the previous Danbo series kind of had a midway point where they got, like, a new direction. So I'm kind of curious where that's going to go. Will they stay at the school, or...
Yeah, so far the whole series, Wars at least, has been... pretty connected from arc to arc.
Yeah.
Because in the original 2 series, everything sort of, you know, you're always bouncing around from something new, and each arc would only last, you know, a couple episodes here and there. And so you're always kind of moving on. But with this one, everything feels a little more connected and kind of, I guess, more solid overall.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be curious to see if this does get wrapped up, or if something comes along to extend it, or...
Yeah, I'm not sure how long it's continuing, because, I mean, it feels like it's about ready to hit the kind of climax arc, and then...
Could last 17 minutes.
It could last 17 minutes. It could last 17 episodes.
At the same time, though... Oh, sorry.
Well, in terms of kits, one that I think Celadi is going to end up using, because it reminds me a lot of Phantom, is coming out next, and then after that, there's, like, another, new Dot Blasterizer. I don't know if that's going to be in, like, a movie, or whether that's going to be in the show, but outside of that, there hasn't been anything for any other kits. So I don't know what's happening with...
Is it getting canceled?
I don't think it's getting canceled.
No. Well, if I remember right, like, both the last 2 series, like, around midway point, they would get sort of a climax, but the plots from both sides were sort of interconnected. It wasn't like, we defeated this villain, here's a brand new villain that has nothing to do with it. It was always connected. It just kind of springed off of that. So, I'm assuming that's kind of what will happen. But I was just kind of curious, like, what will change? Will they stay at the school? Will they keep the format?
Even if they get rid of the terrorist organization, or at the very least stop the threat that it has on the school, they still have to deal with the school. Because I know, at least with Hojo, he still really doesn't like just the whole idea of everything.
Yeah.
And he himself wants to stop this whole program, change. So I mean, we would still have that to deal with.
Yeah, because Second World's still obviously important. I'm just curious how they might, you know, keep things moving a little bit. Maybe the world will find out about it or something. I don't know. Am I the only one that kind of misses the one-on-one battle sometimes? Like, I love that Wars changed it up and it made it feel fresh, but sometimes I kind of miss those one-on-one battles.
I do. I miss the little attack functions.
Yeah.
They said attack. You don't get them that often anymore.
Yeah.
We got them in this episode, or one of the two, because he had, like, debuted it, but I don't know. It would be kind of nice, whether it's the rest of this or if they do another series after this, to to mix it up a little bit, just because it did get a little bit tiresome when I was marathoning them. Like, they would battle every time someone, like, dropped a cracker. But I still liked the battles, and they were fun to watch, and the attack functions, and I like seeing them just text message to victory. I don't know. It's just like, yeah. It's just like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, man? Battles, attack function, super cooking.
Okay, Dawson.
No, I'm just thinking about the Winged Dragon of Ra music and, like, zooming in on the alpaca and, like, it has no expression, but yet it somehow conveyed emotion of shock. Oh, oh God. Anyway, I think that's actually the end of Ramble Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we'll have Downball next week. It might be a two-episode thing where we can do it every other week. Stupid guy got responsibilities. Or they call it Rugrats responsibilities.
Yeah, I don't mind that, because I don't know. I feel like we have a little bit more to say if we're talking about it in a batch.
Yeah.
Episode to episode.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brian.
No, I do agree, though. So.
Well, yeah, you said, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Billy, go home.
Now it's time for
the Twitter questions of the week.
Yeah! More about the Catherman! Froakie!
Yeah!
Gweeb!
Gweeb!
Fleeb Egon. Oh, it's gonna start airing soon! Fuck yeah, Fleeb Egon Quish Steve!
Okay. So, anyway, first up is Dylan Price, who says, what is currently your favorite Sentai and why?
GoBusters. Because of all the reasons we've talked about on the podcast for a long time. And because of Jay.
Oh my god. Jay was seriously the best thing about Superhero Taisen.
He sweeps like up the fight scene. He walks in slow motion with the broom.
I do like that he didn't even fight.
He didn't.
Like, he didn't do anything aside from sweep up, and I don't even know how he got there.
No, he was the guardian of the forest. He had to clean up the area that was next to it, apparently. Like, it was so random. It really was people show up the movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I love GoBusters. it is... I don't know, I feel like it's boring if we just all say GoBusters, because I feel like that is sort of the obvious answer.
I like how to us it's the obvious answer, and like half the fandoms are going, GoBusters is awful.
Why are they in their own versus movie? This is an outrage. What are the GoBusters doing in GoBusters versus Kyoryuger? God.
God,
Toku fans are so stupid.
They already had a versus movie. They faced off against themselves. This should be Kyoryuger versus Dino Sentai or whatever. I don't give a shit. Just give me Z-Ranger.
Fucking Z-Ranger, oh my god. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it, for us, it's the obvious answer. We are such an advocate of the show here at the podcast that... It's kind of obvious. If I wasn't going to say GoBusters, which I am, I think I might say...
I would probably say Maji.
I was on the fence between Maji Ranger and Geki Ranger.
Geki's my second favorite.
I know other Sentai have done the whole family thing. I have not watched any of them. But, that is one of the biggest draws to Maji Ranger. I love the idea of the entire team being a family as opposed to three strangers, or not three, but, you know, a group of strangers or a group of friends or whatever. Because a lot of the, I don't know, a lot of the ways characters grow and interact with each other just sort of changes. Because they have to write it differently. Because... They all obviously know each other and are very used to each other and already have a strong bond. It's just sort of building off of that. And I think Maji Ranger did a really good job with that. And I don't normally like magic-related series. And going into it, I thought I was going to hate it. And it really surprised me.
Yeah.
I was waiting to see how long the silence would go.
But no,
why does that always happen after I talk?
Like, everything that you
giving
said
it a complex
is true for me too, except for the fact that I knew I was going to enjoy it because of the magic thing.
Brian likes magic.
But, I mean, everything else you said is absolutely 100% true. As for Geki, it's kind of one of those, it was my first, that's not Shinkenger sort of thing. And I like the focus on the villains. A lot of people don't, but I don't, it just worked for me. But yeah, those are my top three for sure, but GoBusters.
I mean, even if it wasn't your first, Geki's still a really solid series.
Oh yeah.
It was my number one until GoBusters came along, which is saying something because nothing could really top it until then for me.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff I really enjoyed about Geki. I kind of want to go back and rewatch it. But was anybody else confused as to why Geki Violet and Geki Chopper didn't show up in Super Hero Taisen? Because, like,
the other two live men didn't, did they?
Yeah, the other two live men didn't either.
They lost the suits. I don't know.
They aren't animals.
Well, technically, Geki Violet did show up in Super Hero Taisen. And he brought his hair.
Fabulous hair.
That fucking hair.
Every time they panned on him, everyone would start laughing. I don't know, maybe. Because even though it was in suit, maybe they thought it was confusing because Geki Violet was a different actor. And they're like, well, if the Geki Rangers can't have their two Rangers, then Live Man doesn't get it. I don't know. Plus, I think the green one was on paternity leave.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
And Black
You remember Hat. Shit like that? You don't remember, like, these common things?
Exactly.
Anyway. Chenix asks, let's see, with Pokemon X and Y being out a month when Brian reads this, time passes fast, doesn't it? It does. It's really creepy. I hate it. Fucking like, time.
Brian falls asleep 2 hours past. Oh my god, it's out to get me.
I love that. Brian's the only person I know who could get creeped out by time passing.
Another minute he passes on the clock, he watches it, just screams. Reminds me of Abed freaking out because of daylight savings.
And a simple one so Dawson doesn't have to think. What is your favorite one of the Pokemon movies?
I've only seen the first three. But they're all kind of boring. Admittedly, I'm sorry.
If I had to pick one, I'd probably pick... Yes.
Pokemon the movie, yeah. Like, honestly, because I watched the first four a bunch of times because when I was younger, I rewatched them a lot, and those four will re-air randomly on, like, HBO and Starz, and I'll watch them occasionally. But, like, all the other ones I've almost only seen once, if at all. I think there was a couple I'm still haven't seen. That was great. But I think out of the ones that I can remember the most, my favorite's probably four, just because I liked the whole Professor Oak kid thing. Thank you, Brian. And I like seeing the old Pokeball where you crank it. So that was fun. I thought 3 was totally weird as fuck. Like, they must smoke a shit ton of weed before they write these movies. The Pokemon movies are always so weird and don't fit the tone of the show at all. It always gets in, like, a weird vibe and there's a weird plot and the Pokemon talks telepathically. Sorry. Waiting to say that since I was 8.
I don't know, I kind of really like the second one. I seen the second one 5.5 billion times, I swear to God. Because that was when, like, Pokemon was really popular. So.
Yeah.
It was released in theaters.
Everyone in school that I was friends with invited everyone to go see the Pokemon movie for their birthday, and apparently everyone's fucking birthday was in the span where this movie was in theaters. I seen party. This movie for everyone's fucking birthday party at least six fucking times. And that is, it will probably always hold the record for the amount of times I went to the movie theater to watch a movie, and it wasn't even my fucking choice. But, yeah, I really like that one. I always like Lugia. So
Lugia's the best.
As far as newer ones go, which is saying something because it's not new at all, I don't mind the Lucario movie. I enjoyed that one. And I like the Deoxys movie because Munchlax was in it. He evolved, and it was pretty cool.
I think the last one that I remember being in theaters was the fifth one, which was the Heroes one with the Latios and Latias in it. Because I remember that was only shown at like a couple theaters here, and I went to go see it.
Yeah, I did too.
And then I don't think any others came out after that I remember. There might have been, but I didn't hear about it.
As far as I know, Heroes was the last one until the Victini movie.
Yeah, so Pokemon.
Okay. We had that question already. Sorry, Phantom Thong, we had that question already.
What was it?
Store loyalties.
Oh, yeah. And then we all were just like, oh, fuck. We just said that for like 5 minutes and then moved on.
I'm loyal to Borders.
I think we did that too.
Okay, so Kiefer S., with the Christmas season just a short time away, I've got a seasonal question for you guys. What is the best or funniest holiday gift you've ever given someone, and what is the best reaction you've ever received from someone upon opening one of your gifts to them? I wish I had started. I know there's a story somewhere in my head, and I can't find it. I don't usually give gag gifts too often.
Yeah, neither do I. And I don't really care about people's reactions because I hate when people watch me when I'm opening presents because I feel, like, compelled to react.
Yeah.
And so same that makes here. Me feel uncomfortable.
I really don't like that because if it were up to me, I just wouldn't really have that much of a reaction. I mean, I'd open it and I would appreciate the gift. But when people are watching you open gifts, it's like, I don't want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
So right. Now I have
always to know what I'm going
to
get. So,
like, I just hate that. So I hate doing that to other people. Like, there's only been a couple times where I've genuinely been surprised by a gift, or there's a couple. The last two Christmases, I would laugh because my mom kept getting me things I already had. Like, she got me an MMPR sweater I had already bought a long time ago, and she bought me this. 2 years ago, she bought me this Prison Break, one of those big, like, nerd books that I already had. So I have two of those. But that was one of the reactions I had because I just started laughing. Like, oh boy, I have this. Are you sure you didn't just go get this from my shelf and wrap it?
As for like gifts given, a friend of mine and I, a friend that I've known since high school, 1 year for Halloween, we were handing out candy, and he just picked up this blue plastic spider and threw it at me. And I don't know why, but from there on, we kept coming up with different ways to throw this thing at each other or to surprise each other with it by somehow giving it to one another.
Uh-huh.
So every so often, you know, maybe for my birthday, he hands me a case and I'll open it and it'll be the spider. Or I will get him something for Christmas and I'll put the spider inside of it. You know, I don't know. That's the only thing I can really think of. It's just this weird sort of competition to see all of the different ways we can give each other this this stupid plastic toy.
Like I said, I'm sure there's a a story in my head somewhere, and I can't find it for the life of me. So I'm just going to ignore this question. Sorry, Keefs.
Keefs? We're going to start calling him that now. Keefs?
Okay, Edgar Queck says, if there were dual-type Eevees, what would you want their type, name, and evolution method to be?
No.
No?
No. I reject.
I think that takes the fun out of Eevee.
I'm trying
Not
to think
that Eevee's
of
a whole lot of fun anymore anyway, but...
I'm trying to think of, like, a name combination that would sound dirty.
Brian, you make it sound like Eevee's not fun.
Make a fairy grass type and you can make, like, pink taco on. Never mind.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
I tried.
Wait.
Give me a little bit of effort.
I know, but wait, why is grass associated with tacos?
Well, it was, like, lettuce and stuff. I was trying to think of something
taco-y.
Oh, I can
see it. Okay. I was trying to think, what the hell kind of vegetables in a taco? I forgot about the lettuce.
It's the first thing that popped in my head. Oh, God.
Brian just makes tacos, grass.
I'm sorry for that joke, everyone. Yeah, I got nothing. And then there was silence.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I can't think of anything. I can't think of anything. Like, I was thinking...
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, okay. More your question inspired silence.
All right, so Fives Daniel asked.
Question was asked.
What? Oh. So he says, do you think that Gen 6 is possibly the best Pokemon generation that Nintendo has ever done, and why?
I think it's best graphically, for sure.
It might be... I don't want to end up saying something I don't want to actually say.
I always try to do that. It never works, though.
I really enjoyed Gen 6. It was really fun to play, but I can't say if it's the best. I don't think it's the best generation. I think X and Y are probably the best games. But at the same time, there really isn't too much in X and Y that kind of set it horribly apart from the others at the core. So, I mean, there isn't really too much that X and Y did over, say, Black and White that, in terms of just the base gameplay function, to make it a better generation. When you're looking at the core Pokemon, I don't think Gen 6 is the best generation because... Well, it's really small, for one thing. As a whole, I wouldn't say it's the best generation, but I think X and Y are probably the most solid games, if you ignore the general lack of after-game-ness.
You know, like, I was
Not that
trying
that
to
really
think
bothers
about,
me, but...
I've been trying to think about this for a while, like, trying to rank them. And it's difficult, so fresh.
Why always gotta rank things, society?
Well, I like to rank things, Brian. It's how I pass the time, okay? I have no one to talk to.
That's not my problem.
I was just trying to think about it, and it's kind of difficult to do so, like, right off the bat. Like, I have to give it time, because, like, all the other ones... It's the same thing when I'm trying to think about, like, favorite Pokemon. I've had so much time to spend with the other generations and other Pokemon that it's almost unfair. But I think, technically, it was the most impressive, but I don't think it's necessarily the best overall. I think it's a great step to making the later games possibly the best. But there was a lot, thinking back in a lot of ways, like, the smaller amount of Pokemon, it sounds so petty, a lot of people think, oh, it doesn't matter about the number, but sometimes I like to have more Pokemon. And I felt like, a lot of way, the selection, in terms, if you just want to use 6th-gen Pokemon, it was a little unbalanced.
Yeah.
Like, when I was
that problem.
Like, when I was trying to mentally, still when I'm trying to mentally build teams for when I eventually do a Chespin and, the other one, Delphox playthrough, it's really unbalanced, and I have a hard time because there's like several grass types I want to use at the same time, and like the fighting type and the secondary dark type, it's like I can only use Pancham at a certain time. Like, it's really unbalanced with what you have. I mean, they gave you a huge range of previous gens to counter that, but on my first playthroughs, I always like to just use the new Pokemon. So it makes it a really difficult, makes that a really difficult.
You look at certain types really got screwed over. Like, there's only one non-legendary ground type Pokemon introduced this gen, and that's big ass bunny guy.
Diggersby.
Diggersby, yeah. And then I don't know, the whole, like, all of the newer Pokemon feel so scarce.
Yeah, they were like the rarest ones. Like, when I would be hunting down Pokemon in a grassy area, the sixth generation Pokemon that was in there would be the one I would run into the least often. So yeah, that was weird. There was a lot of problems with that. And the pacing. I loved the amount of time between 1 and 2, the badges. And I don't think there should have been 10 hours between every badge, but maybe more than 3 seconds. I mean, that's the way it happens in a lot of the games, but because of that first gap, it felt so odd.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's my favorite. Obviously, it's only been out a month. But I've had a shitload of fun with these games.
I love all the additional little features, like wonder trading and all the online capabilities.
There are a bunch of little things. And even with the battle mechanics, there are a bunch of little things that were added that even before the games came out, I was kind of psyched that they were doing, because it changes everything in just the slightest of ways, but it kind of adds up over time. Mm-hmm. And I like that. That's fun. I'd say my biggest issue with the game is just I want more Pokemon.
Yeah.
I am not one of those people who is like okay with there not being more there, because like I said, they feel so scarce. It doesn't feel like I run into the new Pokemon quite as often as I should, and with it being a new generation, I feel like the new generation of Pokemon really should be at the forefront. It's nice that this is the largest number of Pokemon we've had in a single game, and that there are a lot of older ones to pick from, but like I said, I feel like the new ones should be at the forefront. You should want to go out and find all of these new types, and to see some of the types like poison and ground. I mean, poison kind of always gets screwed, but some of the types just don't get any sort of representation, or just not much, in this new gen. And even if they do, it's kind of hard to find some of them. It took Dawson forever to find a Noibat. It took me forever to find a Litleo. And that's not as rare.
Like, if I were just running through the game, you know, without trying to catch all the Pokemon like I was, there's a good chance I would have missed out on seeing a good chunk of the new Pokemon.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them I had to look for forever, like Dedenne and Noibat, and some, especially if you have repels on, like when I'll play the game later on when it's not new and I'm just, you know, playing for fun and I'm not trying to catch everything. Thank you, Ryan.
I need a new chair really bad. But I completely agree in the fact that it was so hard to find some of the new guys, and the ones that I really wanted to use like weren't toward the end of the game, like Noibat.
That's really annoying. Just same thing happened with Braviary.
It did. And I don't mind the smaller roster if they were more prevalent, but they weren't. It was just shoving old Pokemon in your face, and I understand they wanted to have they didn't want people to be bored, And they want a new, every wild encounter to be like a new experience. And I get that. I just don't 100% agree with it. I don't agree with the way that they handled it. But it created an issue in the fact, with the small roster anyway, that, like you said earlier, it was difficult to form a solid team of only new guys, which is what my run was. Because I went in going, I didn't want to use any old Pokemon, because I want to use the new guys. That's what the point of the new game is. And they made that really difficult. especially, like, kind of early on in the game, where you just weren't really running into a solid group of new Pokemon. And so you really didn't have... You had a lot of choices, and you could argue that you had too many choices, but to people who wanted to use the new Pokemon, you really didn't have choices at all.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of frustrating in that regard. But like Aerosol said, there's so many things in the game that make it one of the most enjoyable Pokemon experiences. And now that the story is over and I can use whatever Pokemon I want to, and I kind of have everything situated, the game's a lot more enjoyable from that regard. And
I do wish there was a little more in the after game.
I'm repeating everything what everyone said, but what you said, the pace was really jacked up in this game.
Yeah.
Because it started like this big long gap between Gym 1 and Gym 2, and you're like, wow, this game's gonna be really fucking long. And then you get to Gym 2, and then a little bit you get to Gym 3, and then 4, and 5, and 6, and I think there was that chunk of story. With team,
it was like an hour between 7 and 8 or something like that.
Oh, lovely. And then that ended, and then it's like, here's 7, here's 8. And then, oh, there's the Victory Road, like, right next to the city that the gym is, which I guess happened in Gen 1, but whatever. So the pacing was really jacked up, and the story was kind of not there. Which is fine. I mean, I'm not really playing Pokemon for the story, but coming off of a gen where there was so much story with Black and White, and Diamond and Pearl even had a pretty decent story going on in it. It was kind of weird to go back to the kind of storyless game.
You know,
there was a nice lore behind the game. I won't really say there was a good story, but there was a nice lore behind it anyway.
I think Black and White kind of spoiled us in a lot of ways, too, with the Pokemon amounts, because there were so many in that game. You had so many choices. Like, there's still a bunch of Pokemon I still want to go back and use when I replay it, because there were so many different teams I was building for that, because we got, like, 150-something new. Mm-hmm. So, it's, like, less than half. But, yeah, I really like Gen 5.
All right, so Jeff S., speaking of long Pokemon discussions, what's your favorite thing to do in Pokemon? Like training, online battles with friends, breeding, etc. Lots of Pokemon questions this week.
We do talk about Pokemon quite a bit.
Yeah. Like I said, Pokemon podcast, let's do it.
PPP. Doesn't even have to have things that stand for it.
We can just call it PP Up the Podcast.
Shit.
I like the concept of a show called PP Up the Podcast. Like, we're just filling the podcast with PP.
I know, but that's what's perfect about it.
Urine everywhere.
Oh, God.
Where the hell did Arisal go?
I wonder why he's so quiet. I thought he was mad at me.
Maybe he went and peed too. See, PP Up the Podcast. Yeah. He'll get a hoot out of this when he comes back. And listens to it in the future. Anyway.
Kevin will listen to it in 2 years. Hi, future Kevin.
Training and breeding, when I actually have time, I did this a lot during Platinum. Training and breeding, just making up new teams or building upon, like a rotation. I had a pretty large rotation built up in Platinum that I switched around for Wi-Fi battles and tournaments with my friends and stuff. Unfortunately, I didn't do that at all in black and white. I don't know why. Black and white just... That after portion just didn't hold me as much as the Gen 4 did. I don't know if it has to do with the game or whether it was just things that were going on in life that just made me not have as much time.
Black 2 and White 2 had a shit ton of stuff in it. Whoa. What?
I said the opposite was true for me.
Yeah, the same here, because like, I was kind of...
Gen 4 really didn't hold my attention that much, but Black and White, I played a lot. I think it's one of my most played games in terms of how many hours I spent with it. What's the question?
What's your favorite thing to do in Pokemon?
What's my favorite what?
Thing to do in Pokemon.
Okay.
In terms of the game holding interest, I thinking about it, it had a lot to do with just life. When Gen 4 was out, was when I was going to a lot of TCG tournaments. So I was talking to a lot of people with the game, and we were having like online Wi-Fi battles and stuff using Battle Revolution on the Wii and stuff to do tournaments too. So there was a lot going on for me at the time to kind of keep me interested in the game. But during Black and White, some people stopped playing. Other people just stopped playing the video game competitively and stopped building teams so we didn't have tournaments. And so and that was also, ironically, when Nintendo started doing the tournaments. And then the competitive scene just got huge, and I hate the competitive scene. They're dicks. And so I could never really get into that, so I just kind of stopped. I'm hoping now that kind of IVs are a lot easier to get and EV training super duper easy in X and Y, that maybe I might actually participate in a tournament or two for the video game this season, but I don't know.
Whenever someone says IVs, all I can think about is the thing that goes into your arm. IV training. Yes, I can take the needle.
But training and breeding is my favorite thing to do. Everything you listed is kind of... The entire experience is my favorite thing, really. Because, I mean, there's no point in breeding without having a purpose, which usually leads to training, and you're training to do the online battles with your friends. So, they kind of all go hand in hand, but that whole experience is... I used to play to fill out the Pokedex, but I stopped really giving a shit. I still want to do it, but...
It's just like Ash, still going.
Well, Ash is a complete fucking retard.
I think for me, like, I just enjoy it in general, and I love, you know, playing after the game's over and training Pokemon and experimenting, but I think my favorite part of in general is, like, the initial journey. Even if it's a replay, I love, like, building your first team of that game, just seeing, like, trial and error of who you might use and how the Pokemon grow, and I don't know, just kind of a special experience, and, like, that team's kind of always the special one of that. That game, the first six you have.
I totally agree with that. That's one of the most enjoyable things about the game. Well, all of the games for me. It wasn't until I got Emerald that I started doing that, where I just picked six Pokemon that I wanted to use. And only use them until I beat the main story. Because before it was just, you know, catch whatever and catch everything. But I don't know. For me, I feel like it got a lot more interesting once I started focusing only on a core group. And then, you know, after I beat the game, I tend to team build a lot. I pick a new group of six. And then go out and just kind of derp around the world until they're a high level, and then beat the Elite Four with them, and then pick another group of six. And sometimes I'll have a couple groups going at once and whatever. I like team building. I don't know. I enjoy doing it. So one of my favorite things to do is to pick Pokemon that people either hate or just genuinely don't really like that much.
Sounds like my fire team. I'm using a Torkoal.
So, like, in Black and White, I started training a Stunfisk, and I think he's around level 60 now, because I stopped when X and Y came out. But, you know, I like taking Pokemon that people don't tend to enjoy that much and seeing how they actually fare. And
I think that's kind of why I suck so hard in the actual, like, tournament scene. Because, like, I play to use, like, Pokemon I enjoy. And most of the time, the Pokemon I enjoy are the ones that aren't really all that good. And so my team is always consisting of these overall weaker Pokemon, but I just love them so much. And if you train them right, most of the time they can actually fare decently against actual, like, competitive teams. So, God, that reminds me of that one argument we were having with that guy on Twitter.
About what?
Well, me and Aerosol. We were having that argument with that guy on Twitter.
Oh, that jackass. Yeah, fuck that guy. I hope he's listening. Because fuck that guy. Yeah, I don't know why I train Pokemon so much, because I like the idea of battling people, but I don't do it. Like, listening to Black and White that I actually had, well, not Black and White, it would have been Diamond and Pearl, that I actually had friends that played Pokemon, because I was just never around people that played it growing up. So, and even still, like, I don't do it as often as I would like. I should probably do that more often and just kind of ask people on Twitter if they want to battle. I doubt I'll get a response, but hey, if you want to battle, I'll battle.
I'll battle you.
Someone battle me, please.
I got a couple random battle requests from, like, passerbys and stuff when I go on the internet. And I always forget how it works, because it was when I was trying to breed Houndours, which I'm actually still doing, because I've only been breeding in, like, these, like, short half-hour intervals, like, every other day, so I haven't, like, progressed at all in terms of building my team. But I'm like, if I hit okay, well, I have to battle with, I think my team was Magmar, a level 1 Houndour and 4 eggs. Am I going to have to battle with this?
Go, egg, use cracks.
And so I just hit no.
When you put Pokemon into the PC...
The battle box?
Just put, yeah, the battle box.
I'll have to remember to put my...
So I keep my core team in the battle box pretty much all the time. At least when I don't have them with me.
Because they did that, like, in the little... battle thing over at City thing, I don't remember. It was like the battle tournament thing, like you could select from your team or the battle box, whoever you wanted.
Did you guys, I can't remember if I retweeted it or it was on Tumblr or something. I can't remember if I put it on Twitter or not, but someone took a picture of just a random passerby battle, and it said, "Jesus Christ has challenged you to a battle."
Oh God.
That's fantastic. I want to get challenged by Jesus Christ. Hell yeah. Alright, so... God damn it. Continue with these stupid string of Pokemon questions.
Here we go. Here goes another half hour.
Charles Strong asks, top 3 most favorite Pokemon and why? Charizard, because of childhood. Munchlax, because we identify with each other.
And we have an understanding.
Scraggy, because there's just a pants full of memories involving Scraggy. So that's kind of my three.
I caught a Scraggy recently. And I named him the French word for pants.
Yes. You're gonna catch a bunch of Scrag and just nickname him Pants in multiple different languages. Pantsu, pantalones. Whatever the French is. I was really quick to answer that one. I apologize.
I have such a hard time with this. I know my favorite Pokemon is like the Totodile and Feraligatr line, but I can never like. I mean, obviously, there's tons of Pokemon I like, but I have a hard time like ranking them beyond my absolute favorite.
I feel like if I started naming like just three, I would remember one later and feel really bad about it.
Yeah. You don't want to put him through that, do you?
That's why I was kind of quick to answer with things I actually had a legit reason for. Because if you actually made me pick, I would sit here all day and go, man, I really like that one too, though.
Like,
because I love so many Pokemon.
Obviously, I do have a favorite. My favorite is Magnemite and just the Magnemite line. The first time I trained one was in, again, Emerald, was when that was the first time I did the just pick a core team and go through it. And the reason I picked him was because I remember in Leaf Green having a hell of a time with a poison type for some reason. I just had a heck of a time with poison. So I made a note to get a steel type. So I'm like, okay, he's steel type. He's also electric type. Cool. I'll just use this little guy. And the Magnemite line in Gen 3 is fucking broken. So he pretty much obliterated everything in his path, and he was awesome. And then it's like, you know, later on I started actually looking up all the different stuff like that he can learn or that he can do, and like he's actually got the most resistances of any other Pokemon in the game. He's got 11 resistances, one of which is like a full resistance. He's completely impervious.
Even after they nerfed Steel a little bit?
Yeah, because they took away the Dark and Ghost resistance, but they gave him resistance to Fairy, as well as a super effective hit against Fairy. Which is why I love my Magnezone in X and Y, because he just flash cannons all the fairies to death.
He flash cannons all the fairies.
Fairies with the dragon killer, Magnezone is the fairy killer.
Yeah, like, poor Gator. I don't know, and there's something just kind of appealing about the little guy. He's, a lot of people make fun of the fact that, oh, he's just based off of magnets. But I like that.
Yeah, magnets are awesome.
He's cute. He's kind of, I don't know, fun. But, I don't know, I guess some of the others. I mentioned on a previous episode that I really like Licky Licky and Lickitung. I don't know why, I just really love that line.
Diggy.
I adore Roselia and Roserade. Because flowers and they look nice. But I don't know, I like how they play too. They're fun to use. I don't know, there's like just from X and Y, obviously I love Chestnut. he's my buddy. Clodser is amazing. I got completely because I needed something to negate fire. That's the only reason I got Clodser, was to fill a spot, and then it ended up being like one of the most useful Pokemon on my team, and I love it.
I really want to end up using one. I can't because I was playing Y, but I'll get one from someone and breed one I like and have fun with it. I really want a shiny one. It's red and looks really cool.
Yeah. I saw.
I really want to find a shiny. Damn it.
I saw someone post the shiny of Clauncher and Clotzer.
Uh-huh.
And they did the whole, like, Zoidberg meme. The why not Zoidberg thing. Because he looks so much like him.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I would love to have a shiny Clauncher. Have you guys seen the other shinies for this gen? Like, the shinies for the starters?
No.
The shinies for the stars are badass.
I seen like, a couple really of the cool. early ones back when I was monitoring NeoGAF.
I can't think of the name. Delphox. Delphox's shiny makes it look like this like dark mage kind of thing.
Is there like a page anywhere, or do I have to like manually?
I was shit? Just like searching on Google and then kind of searching around other places to make sure of its authenticity. But Greninja's shiny is black. And it's cool. Awesome. Chestnut, like I'm blanking on names, but he gets like a little red hood instead of a little green hood. And then Chestnut looks more like along the lines of the normal color scheme for a Quilladin.
That's cool. I hope there is eventually like a page that shows them all, because it'd be easier to find. I'm lazy.
I was really disappointed by Litleo and Pyroar, because I thought it could be really cool since their main is sort of like fire. Mm-hmm. Like, why not just make it blue, or you know, just some like really intense flame? But no, they're just a slightly brighter color.
I hate those shinies. I don't even remember what question we were on.
Top three favorite Pokemon.
Right. Alright, can we move on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll wrap up with Tickety. Dawson got it covered for me. Since we had a fun start with Gaim, if you got the power to transform into a Rider or Sentai, what would be the first thing you do before you get your real reason for being a Transform guy? I would love to just get a huge stock of Lock Seeds and Sengoku Drivers, start an army of Riders, and take over Bandai so we can get toys for free and avoid damn shipping costs. Maybe create world peace if people really want that.
Wait. You can become a Kamen Rider. So you decide to storm Bandai so that you can get your Kamen Rider toys for free. You're already a Kamen Rider. I think you can forget about the toys at that point.
Well, I think the answer is obvious. I mean, if you're a Kamen Rider, you have to do what all Kamen Riders do and be the defenders of Antara. Kill people. That's what Arisa would do first. That's telling.
Seems legit. I don't know what the first thing I would do. I have like this absurd feeling that I would act a lot like Kota and just do random ass shit.
And just try to use it in whenever the situation not even called for it, but when you thought it called for it.
Yes.
That's probably what I would do too. Would be like, I'm just gonna go drive to school, just transform. Well, I can get that for you, jumps up. I think it would be funny just to transform and just walk into places comedically. Like, you know, if I was Gaim, transform into Gaim, walk into Barnes & Noble, just pick up a book and sit down and start reading. The Lawn Suit. I mean, obviously I won't be reading it, but I'd be watching people's reactions.
Yeah.
But I think it would be funny, just awkward situations. Go through the checkout.
I think I would try to keep it under wraps for a little while. Like, go off to, like, abandoned areas, like, in the woods or some kind of quarry or something. and just sort of transform and just like shoot lasers or whatever the fuck I can do, just to my heart's content. And then when I get bored, then I start transforming in public. I'm not sure what I would do. I feel like I would be overwhelmed. I feel like I wouldn't know what to do. Because it's like all of a sudden I have superpowers. And I can like do things. But, you know, it's like right now I'm just sitting here trying to think of stuff. And it's like I'm kind of overwhelmed just by the question because I don't know what I would do.
You're freaking him out, man.
Because part of me feels like I would legit just be really quick to get revenge if someone, like, snubbed me or something like that. Like, if someone was a jerk, transform, you know? I feel like I would be on kind of a short fuse.
Like, someone just snubs you.
I can't.
You say hi to a stranger on the street, they don't say hi back. That's it. Orange Scosh! That's what you get for not saying hi, bitch. It's called courtesy, motherfucker. I don't know why Aerosol's got a black scent. Being a Kamen Rider turns you black. It's just a fact.
The more you know.
So it was being in the 90s.
Like, I stopped it. Wait, why is Aerosol black? Lay down some fat beats. Man, we were laying it on thick. Oh, that's great.
Okay, that is it. Lots of Pokemon.
Yep, Pokemon. So next week is the Facebook question, and then send in your Twitter questions over the next 2 weeks. If you want some long answers, apparently ask Pokemon questions.
Apparently. Because eventually we'll get derailed from whatever the question was and start talking about some other facet of Pokemon.
Yep.
And just be always stuck on the subject.
Now it's time for...
Final Thingies!
Final Thingies. MP3EE.
Thank you, Oz.